From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Concert tour, five lengths in front. Hozier might get second. Eight Rebels for Baffert concert tour. Wow, big run. Four and a half. Hozier second. Big Lake third. Maybe Superstock for fourth.
Superstock, I thought he ran a sneaky good race in the Rebel. I could have very well been second that day. The inside looked like the place to be. Hozier got there. He didn't. Talk a little bit about Superstock.
I agree with you in your assessment of the Rebel. The fact that he kept coming, I think, speaks extremely well for him moving forward. And I love how he's trained since the Rebel going into the Arkansas Derby. Well aware of how fast the horses in there are.
Poxy coming down to the final furlong. Shifts out on good first. Hendrick charging hard on the outside. Assumption being outpaced by this trio. Just being led by Proxy, who's dug his heels in for Angel Suarez. It's the Tapit Colt and Proxy. Proxy finding to the finish will beat good first and Hendrick home. Proxy by 2.5.
In the final furlong, Scott O'Dell's soul is in front. Reinvested his second on the outside. That's laser light. Here you are, Scott O'Dell's soul with the lead. Gato Del Sol wins it by 2.5.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Well, how about that? What a weekend of thoroughbred racing ahead of us. The Arkansas Derby, the Lexington,
now here's
Keeneland, all coming up here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and happy to have you with me this morning. 21 days, 10 hours, 43 minutes, and 5 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, the greatest 2 minutes in sports. And when you think about it, that road to the Kentucky Derby began 231 days ago with the first points race. It was the Iroquois, which was contested beneath the Twin Spires at Churchill Downs. The road wraps up today with the final two points races, and it's a pilgrimage, the connections of 20 horses. All hope will find them sitting beneath those very same Twin Spires on the first Saturday in May. Well, good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched this network. It is the Equine Forum, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you for the next 3 hours this morning, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, and plenty of Kentucky Derby conversation coming your way on today's show. Trainer Mike Stidham will be with me in the third hour of today's program, right around 10:30 Eastern, to talk about his morning line favorite in today's Lexington Stakes. That's Proxy. You just heard the call of Proxy, at least his last win. That was in an allowance race, a few starts back. He currently holds down the 20th position in the point standings, so this is an important race for Proxy. Mike will also saddle Michelin in the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley, and oh, by the way, he is just 2 weeks removed from the biggest win of his career, the Dubai World Cup with Mystic Guide. So looking forward to that visit coming up at 10:30 Eastern. The first hour of the show is loaded with Arkansas Derby conversation. I'm going to be joined by Hall of Fame jockey Eddie Delahousse in just a few minutes, right around 8:15 Eastern, and then segue into Oaklawn handicapper Nancy Holtis at 8:35 Eastern. You know, 30 years ago, Eddie recorded his second victory in the Arkansas Derby with the Ron McAnally-trained Olympia. That win, coming 8 years after his first Arkansas Derby win, Sonny's Halo, who would provide Eddie with his second consecutive win in the Kentucky Derby later that spring in 1983. And if you want a great storyline coming into this year's Kentucky Derby, look no further than the name I just mentioned. No, not Eddie Delahousse, but Hall of Fame trainer Ron McAnally. The 88-year-old was never, at least to this point anyway, able to add the Kentucky Derby to his Hall of Fame resume. In 10 tries, the best finish he would manage was fourth. He did that twice. But 24 years after saddling his last Kentucky Derby starter, which was Irish-bred Hello in 1997. Ron McAnally now may have the chance to finally win that Kentucky Derby, not as a trainer, but as a breeder. It is a fantastic story. Ron and his wife, Deborah, bred Santa Anita Derby winner Rock Your World. And what a story it would be if Rock Your World were to find a way to win the Kentucky Derby in 3 weeks. Rock Your World is a son of Candy Ride. Now, these are McAnally fingerprints all over this horse's pedigree. Rock Your World, the son of Candy Ride, whom Ron trained for owners Sid and Jenny Craig. He is out of a stakes-winning, grade one-placed Empire Maker mare named Charm the Maker, also trained by McAnally, and was owned by his wife, Deborah. And you remember what I told you about the Santa Anita Derby on last week's show? Four of the last nine Kentucky Derby winners have come through that Santa Anita Derby. So recent history says this is the race to keep an eye on. That race and the Florida Derby, those are the two. Trainer John Sadler is going to join me at 9:30 Eastern. He's going to talk about his undefeated Santa Anita Derby winner, Rock Your World. I'll ask him about the Ron McAnally connections. I'm sure that means an awful lot to John. And Rock Your World, didn't he do that to the competition last week? He looked good. His first try on a dirt racing surface. And I think because of the fact that his first two career wins came on the turf, Rock Your World immediately started drawing comparisons to Barbaro and to Big Brown, who both had considerable success on the grass before proving they were more than capable on the main track. So I'll talk to John at 9:30 Eastern time. Some significant news outside of the Kentucky Derby coming out this past Wednesday, Woodbine announcing that they will be forced to postpone opening their 2021 meet another 28 days because of a new provincial state of emergency declared by the government of Ontario. That is a tough, tough blow to all the horsemen and women north of the border. Woodbine CEO Jim Lawson will be with me at 9 o'clock Eastern to fill us in on that situation. It's tough. So here's the menu for you over the course of the next 3 hours. 8:15, that's just about 7 or 8 minutes from right now. Hall of Fame jockey Eddie Delahousse is going to be here. 8:30, it's today's first bet. 8:35, I welcome Oaklawn handicapper Nancy Holtis to preview all the big action on Arkansas Derby Day. 8:53, it's a very special Industry Star of the Week segment. That's presented by Stuart Morris. You will not want to miss it. 9 o'clock Eastern, Jim Lawson from Woodbine at 9:20. Kurt Becker will take you on a stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. 9:30, trainer John Sadler. At 9:50, it's our weekly Calling All Three-Year-Old segment presented by Spendthrift, and you'll hear Bobby Newman's top five Derby prospects as we sit 21 days out. 10 o'clock, we go in the room with Sean Clancy as he sits down for a one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with veteran rider John Court. At 10:30, trainer Mike Stidham, and at 10:45, you will hear from Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen talking about his contenders in today's big stakes races, including the Lexington Stakes and the Arkansas Derby. So as you can tell, a very busy program. If you could choose one jockey, past or present, to ride your horse in the Kentucky Derby, who would you pick? You can only pick one. If you can choose one jockey, past or present, to ride your horse in the Kentucky Derby, who would you pick? That's the question of the day. Go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to let me know. You can also email the show if you don't do the social media thing. Shoot me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know who you would choose. Interesting question. Past or present, too. I wanted to open it up that way because there will be so many people that will say Arcaro, Shoemaker. There will be other people that will say, well, for me, it's Johnny V. And right now, you might want Joel Rosario after what he did last weekend. Is there a hotter jockey in the country right now than Joel? Maybe he's the guy you want on your horse. Maybe it's Calvin Borrell. with all of his success in the Kentucky Derby. But if you could choose one jockey, past or present, to ride your horse in the Kentucky Derby, who would you pick? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. When I come back, I welcome the great Eddie D. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The Spring Summer Meet is live at Gulfstream Park now through September 26th with live racing Thursday through Sunday. Thoroughbred Stakes action continues in May with premium stakes every weekend. Look forward to Summit of Speed on July 3rd and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. Stay in the action from your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For seat reservations, stakes schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site viewing is still limited, so book your seats now. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
They're moving for the stretch. Sonny Taylor on the inside has his head in front. Desert Wine is second. Highland Park still right there. Now coming up on the outside and gaining ground, Slew of Gold. Marfa on the extreme outside. Down the stretch, it's Sonny Taylor on the inside. Desert Wine is second. On the outside, Marfa. Up between horses, Slew of Gold and Play Fellow. They're nearing the finish. It's Sonny Taylor. He's going to win it. Sonny Taylor wins it a length and a half.
Anytime you can have Mike Battaglia's Derby call on the program, you have to try to work it in, and that was a good one. Sonny's Halo getting the victory at Churchill Downs in 1983 after winning the Arkansas Derby under Hall of Fame jockey Eddie Delahousse. It was the first of two wins for Eddie D in the Arkansas Derby, the second being Olympio in 1991. As I told you in the open to the show, Olympio trained by Ron McAnally, who could find himself in the winner's circle, finally in the Kentucky Derby as a breeder this year, the breeder of Santa Anita Derby winner, Rock Your World. That's a great storyline, and I'm really looking forward to see how that plays out. Eddie D is scheduled to join us here shortly. We are efforting Eddie, as they say here in the business. Looking forward to visiting with him, looking back on those two big wins in the Arkansas Derby, and then his victories in the Kentucky Derby as well. You know, Eddie, when you think about his career. And by the way, one of the reasons I wanted to invite him on the program today is that that win by Olympio, his second Arkansas Derby win, came 30 years ago. So the 30-year anniversary of that victory. Olympio did not race in the Kentucky Derby. I think he finished fourth in the Preakness, if I'm not mistaken. But he didn't race in the Kentucky Derby. His first victory, Sonny's Halo, did pretty good, as you just heard, in the Run for the Roses. And Eddie D is one of only four jockeys in history to win consecutive runnings of the Kentucky Derby. Think about that. Just one of four jockeys in history to ever pull it off in consecutive years, which I think is is spectacular. So I'm going to talk to him about that. I do want to ask him, too, about what it was like when he arrived at Churchill Downs for his very first Kentucky Derby. What does he remember about that day? You know, this is Masters weekend, and so many golf fans out there are glued to the television, and so many sports fans, too. I take the Masters, and I put it in the same category as the Kentucky Derby. And I do that because I think that the Masters and the Derby are similar in the fact that people that aren't golf fans will tune in to Sunday at the Masters. People who aren't horse racing fans will tune in on the first Saturday in May. It very well could be the only horse race they watch all year long, and likely is. And the Masters, Sunday at the Masters, may be the only time that people tune in to watch golf all year long. If they're just casual sports fans, if you're a golf fan, you're watching it all year long. If you're a horse racing fan, you're watching racing all year long. But there are some similarities there. And when you think about the storied history of both of those events and the big names that we've seen, you know, you think about the other jockeys to win two consecutive Kentucky Derbies. You have Isaac Murphy, who did it in all the way back in 1890. You had Jimmy Wingfield, and you had Ron Turcotte, who did it in 72 and 73 with Riva Ridge and Secretariat, respectively. That's it. And then Eddie Delahousse. Those are the four. And you think about guys like Calvin Burrell and all the success that he has had in the Kentucky Derby. He hasn't won in a consecutive years. So Eddie D in some elite company there. And when he finally retired back in 2003 at the age of 51, he retired with 6,384 victories. That ranks currently 15th all time. He could really ride. The only jockey in the history of the Arkansas Derby to win more than Eddie Delahousse was fellow Hall of Famer Pat Day. Pat won the race in 86, in 87, and in 1997. He's the only jockey to win the Arkansas Derby three times. If you want to look at the trainer side of things, maybe trying to pick a winner for today, the trainer that has won the Arkansas Derby more than anybody else is trainer Todd Pletcher. He's won the race five times. Now, of course, it won't help you today because you have a horse in the Arkansas Derby. And by the way, that's a very short field today. Only six horses set to go in the Arkansas Derby. I'm going to be joined in the next segment by Oaklawn handicapper Nancy Holtis to tell us more about that race and the races on the undercard as well. It's a loaded program in Hot Springs, Arkansas today. Post time for the Arkansas Derby, in case you're wondering. It's race 12. 7:41 Eastern, 6:41 local time, central time. That's 4:41 on the West Coast. Pretty good show down here, though. As we wait for Eddie D, we are efforting him. I think we're still getting voicemail there, but we'll try to get him on for you here before we get to this next segment, which is the Lexus Legends of the Turf. But pretty good showdown in the Arkansas Derby. Concert Tour is the even money morning line favorite under Joel Rosario for Bob Baffert. I just told you, if there's a hotter jockey in the country right now than Joel Rosario, you have to show me who it is. I mean, the guy was in Fuego last weekend at Keeneland, and he just continues to jump up with big win after big win. And he's going to have his choice as to who he wants to ride in the Kentucky Derby. You have to think if Concert Tour, who is a perfect 3-for-3 coming into the Arkansas Derby today, if he comes out of there a perfect 4-for-4 and does it in dominant fashion, you have to think Joel's going to stick here. He's been aboard Concert Tour for all three of his victories. And this horse does look like a handful. He looks like he could be any kind. Does he remind you of somebody else when you look at his past performances? His debut came January 15th of this year. So much like undefeated Rock Your World, who won the Santa Anita Derby last weekend, Concert Tour didn't make his career debut until he was a three-year-old. He didn't have a start as a two-year-old. And in the past, that would have been cause for concern. Until Justify came along and snapped that curse. Remember, we always used to talk about the curse. You have to have a start as a two-year-old. You can't win without a start at a two-year-old. Well, Justify came along. If I'm not mistaken, he didn't debut until February of his three-year-old season. And all he did was sweep the Triple Crown. Concert Tour, when you look at his running lines and what he's accomplished, to me, he looks a lot like Justify. Now, he's got a lot of work to do before he can be counted as a legend in our sport like Justify is. But Concert Tour certainly has done everything asked of him and done it extremely well, extremely professionally. And you think he has a pedigree to be successful at classic distances? He's a son of Kentucky Derby hero Street Sense, stands at Darley, by the way, out of a Tappet mare, Purse Strings. Yeah, he's got a pedigree to go the distance, too. So, pretty good showdown, though, because Concert Tour, even though on paper he looks like he could lay over this field, the horse that's going to look to turn the tables on him from the Rebel is Caddo River for Brad Cox. Caddo River, people might forget this, in the Rebel on March 13th, Caddo River was favored over Concert Tour. He was the favorite in that race. Now, we know he couldn't match strides with Concert Tour, and that's the problem facing him again today. Caddo River's two big wins came in wire-to-wire fashion. His maiden win on November 15th of last year, and the Smarty Jones two starts back at Oaklawn. They were both wire-to-wire. He broke his maiden by 9.5. He won the Smarty Jones by 10. Dominant. But he didn't get the lead in the Rebel. And the two races prior to his maiden win, he didn't get the lead. He didn't win either one. Is Caddo River just a need-to-lead type? He certainly looks like it. Brad Cox would be the first to tell you no, he's not. But he certainly looks to me like he's a need-to-lead type. And he's going to have to chase. I just think Concert Tour is faster than him. He's faster early. So where does that put Caddo River? It doesn't put him on the lead. If you want to gun him to the lead, which I'm sure Florent Giroux is not going to do that. If you want to gun him to the lead and try to outrun Concert Tour early, well, good luck to you. Because now all you've done is soften yourself up for Concert Tour, who has shown the ability to sit off the pace and finish and win. Hozier is interesting in here, too. No surprise, Bob Baffert holding a couple of live chances in here. Hozier, interesting. Third, check that, second in the Grade 2 Rebel behind Concert Tour. You could see them run 1-2 again today. But again, the Arkansas Derby coming up 7:41 Eastern, 6:41 Central Time. That is race number 12. The race before it, always a fun race. It is the Grade 3 Count Fleet Sprint, and all eyes will be on the 8-year-old gelding Whitmore. For trainer Ron Moquette, Ricardo Santana Jr. in the saddle. Whitmore, the champion sprinter from last year after winning the Breeders' Cup Sprint at Keeneland. Second in his debut, he was beaten in neck after having the lead briefly in the stretch. That was in the Hot Springs on March 13th. That was his 8-year-old debut. You gotta love Whitmore. 8 years old, still showing up, still running his race, still loving his job. And for people that say, wait a minute, he's 8 years old, just retire the old man. He's an 8-year-old gelding. He has been treated as well as any horse in the history of our sport for his entire career and he is still loving his job. Fantastic story. All the best to Whitmore in that Count Fleet later today for Ronnie Moquette and the team involved with Whitmore. Fantastic stuff. All right, I'm going to go ahead now and get to your Lexus Legends of the Turf. I guess Eddie D must have got hung up this morning, but we'll try to bring him your way in the weeks to come. Nancy Holtis is on deck next. She will talk about Whitmore. She'll talk about the Arkansas Derby and all the action that takes place on that Arkansas Derby Day card. Coming up at the end of the first hour of the program, a very special industry star of the week that you won't want to miss. That's about 8:53 Eastern. Jim Lawson from Woodbine talking about the situation north of the border at 9 o'clock. At 9:30, John Sadler will be here to look back on Rock Your World's big win last weekend. Mike Stidham still coming up at 10:30 Eastern, and Steve Asmussen toward the end of the program at 10:50. So a lot of things to get to, but first things first, it is your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the great folks at Lexus of Lexington.
On Saturday afternoon, August 31st, 1955, at Washington Park in the suburbs of the Windy City, Chicago, on the shores of Lake Michigan, two giants of the world of thoroughbred racing were about to square off in a rubber match, as it were. Each had defeated the other during the year, and the arguments amongst fans and horsemen alike had been raging all year long as to which one indeed was the best, Nashua or Swaps. Nashua, the son of Nasrullah, was racing in the colors of Belair Stud, was conditioned by the venerable Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, and had the crafty, wily, hard-nosed, heady Eddie Arcaro in the saddle. Swaps, that year's Kentucky Derby winner, in which he whipped Nashua, by the way, was owned by Rex Ellsworth, trained by Mish Tenney, and had the services of Willie Shoemaker as his reinsman. The two stellar stalwarts were equally weighted, and the distance was 1¼ miles. The strategy was put forth in the paddock as follows. Fitzsimmons told Arcaro to, quote, keep the other horse busy all the way and let the best horse win, unquote. Tenney told Shoemaker, quote, save a little horse at all times and run when you have to, ride him as you always have, unquote. The track surface at Washington that day was on the slow side and drying out, and that, as it turned out, was most probably a key factor in the race itself. Nashua, breaking from post two, went away very quickly under solid urging from Arcaro and assumed an early lead. Swaps, breaking from post four, was hustled up by Shoemaker, who would have none of Arcaro's attempted ploy, and they were both soon side by side. They were right together, with Nashua holding the slightest of leads as they went to first quarter in 23 flat, the half in 46 flat, and the first six panels in 1, 10, and 2. On down the backside and on into the turn, they remained exactly the same. Between the 3/8 pole and the quarter pole, smack in the middle of the turn, it appeared Swaps was ready to make his big move. As they came off the top of the turn to the straight, the wily Arcaro took Nashua out off the rail just a little bit to find a more solid footing, and Shoemaker had a choice to make, to either drop down to the fence where the going was deep and tiring, or to go to the overland route. Schumacher opted to take his mount out and around, if indeed he could. Well, by this time, Nashua had opened a clear lead, and Swaps was a beaten horse. Nashua continued to increase his margin through the final 3/16 to ultimately cross the wire, a 6½-length winner in a final time of 2:04-1 in the deep going. The key to the race was, without any shadow of the doubt, the impeccable strategy of Arcaro, who lived up to the fullest his reputation as a master reinsman and the affectionate moniker of Eddie Eddie. Every time Shoemaker had let Swaps put a notch on the backside and into the far turn, Arcaro had responded in kind with Nashua, and that stratagem on the turn, when forcing Swaps out some, was the work of a true artist in the saddle. After the race, Shoemaker said he felt Swaps did not take a liking to the track condition and surface, and it was later learned that his right foreleg, on the foot of which he wore a protective leather pad between frog and shoe, had gone lame. Nevertheless, the score had been settled the way it should have been, on the racetrack, against each other. August 31st, 1955, Washington Park in the Windy City. A great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years.
experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include Pennsylvania Derby winner Math Wizard, graded stakes winner Recruiting Ready, juvenile stakes winner and multiple graded stakes placed South Bend. And these recent stakes winners and stakes performers.
To get there, but Kanani will win it.
Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park is now open to the general public. Just visit santaanita.com/open. Walk-up admission is not yet available, and fans are asked to please socially distance and wear a mask upon arrival. All of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Looking ahead, Santa Anita will operate on a Saturday and Sunday basis through Sunday, April 18th, in order to freshen our turf course and prepare for the remainder of our winter spring meet, which runs through June 20th. The Grade 2 $200,000 Californian will be run on Saturday, April 17th, and make plans to join us on April 18th as top sprinters go 6 furlongs in the Grade 3 Kona Gold. Again, first post time this weekend is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Don't forget that we will be on site at Churchill Downs beginning the Tuesday prior to the Kentucky Derby as we kick off all of our live coverage to get you set for the Run for the Roses. It begins Tuesday, April 27th, 8 a.m. Eastern, the first of three consecutive Derby countdown shows. Bobby Newman, Jude Feld, going to have those shows for you. And they're presented by our friends at Hillandale. We'll have interviews with jockeys and owners and trainers and handicappers and reports on the workouts as they happen on the track. A lot of things coming your way that week. And then, of course, Friday, our coverage of the Kentucky Oaks. On Saturday, this program, a Derby edition, Saturday, May 1st, and then coverage of the Kentucky Derby undercard beginning at 3 o'clock Eastern, and at 5 o'clock we segue into our exclusive radio coverage of the Run for the Roses in partnership with NBC Sports. Really looking forward to that coming up later. 3 weeks from today. Can't believe 3 weeks until the Kentucky Derby. Hard to believe, but that's what it is. Two final Derby preps on the docket today, including the Arkansas Derby. Nancy Holtis is the handicapper at Oaklawn. She'll be with me momentarily, but it's time now to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's First Bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's First Bet.
Today's First Bet comes in Race 9 at Oaklawn Park. The $400,000 Oaklawn Mile has a post time of 5:49 Eastern, 4:49 locally in Hot Springs, Arkansas. It is number 6 by my standards, who is 5-2 on the morning line and has a 30% win projection by First Bet. He rates 13 points higher than the next closest competitor, ranks number 1 in the field in 9 key factor categories from First Bet, and last year's Oaklawn Handicap winner is 1-for-1 over the track. He gets a hot pace to close into, fitting the race shape, and the Brett Calhoun, Gabe Saez trainer jockey combo is 32% wins, 50% in the exacta since January 10th. Number 6, by my standards, in Race 9 at Oaklawn Park is today's First Bet. And I'm back in 60 seconds to talk more about today's Arkansas Derby card with Oaklawn handicapper Nancy Holtis.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, those First Bet statistics certainly make you think that by my standards is the horse to beat. And again, 5-2 on the morning line at Oaklawn in race 9 today, the $400,000 Oaklawn Mile. It is part of a program at Oaklawn, 13 races, 4 stakes, including a couple of graded stakes. I told you about the Count Fleet, and we talked about the Arkansas Derby in the last segment, but nobody knows Oaklawn Racing the way that Nancy Holtis knows it, and she's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Nancy, good morning. Appreciate the visit.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, no, excited to hear your thoughts on some of these big races. I referenced the 13 races and the 4 stakes, and we can touch on all 4 of those. We'll kind of take them in order and wrap it up with the Arkansas Derby. And if there's anybody else that you feel deserves a look on today's card outside of those stakes races, I'll give you time at the end to throw it out there. But let's start by talking about any special wagers or different pools or carryovers or anything like that that folks can expect on Arkansas Derby Day.
Well, unfortunately, no carryovers, but it's interesting that the late 50-cent pick 5 starts in race number 9. So, you know, when you get to work at 7:30 in the morning and when you're going through the day and you announce in race 9 for the Oaklawn Mile that the 50-cent pick 5 starts in race 9, you're like, oh, my God, we have 5 more races to go. But that includes some amazing stakes races. So you might be able to possibly get some value because, and the reason why I say that it might be some heavy favorites in those stakes, is because the last race on the card is a maiden for three-year-olds. There are 5 maidens for three-year-olds on the card today. We open with an Arkansas-bred maiden three-year-old. And on these big days, Mike, you see the Asmussen barn really fire with all cylinders. So I do expect a big day. He's got, I believe, 12 in today. So that barn will be like an assembly line. So I'm thinking a big performance. I know he has 16 people here. And sometimes I will sometimes gauge my handicapping a little bit if owners are coming in to see their horses run in these big stakes. And who's going to show up? Because, you know, owners like to get their pictures taken because this game is not cheap.
No, it's certainly not. What's the weather like in Hot Springs today, Nancy?
Well, you know, we had rain come in, surprisingly, before first post. That was not supposed to be in the vicinity until 7 o'clock last night. I just texted my personal track man, Paul Holtis, and asked him what the track looked like, and he feels confident that the track will be fast by first post. So I have a lot of faith in him, so I'm gonna be confident that the track is going to be fast. I'm sure they sealed it very tight last night, and I think we're going to see a lot of fast horses over a fast track today.
Yeah, let's hope that it is, because, you know, days like this, you love to see them contested on a fast track and not a, you know, an off track where all of a sudden you start talking about a horse that just liked the off going, and that's why they ran so well. There will be no questions today if that track is indeed fast, especially by the time we get to the Arkansas Derby, but hopefully by the first post, as you just mentioned. All right, let's start talking about the 4 stakes races, and again, we'll wrap it up with the Arkansas Derby, which is race 12, but the first of the 4 stakes is race number 6, which is a 6-furlong sprint. It's called the Carousel Stakes, $250,000, the older fillies and mares. Tell me a little bit more about this race, Nancy.
Well, we saw Frank's Roquette put on a fabulous performance in the American Beauty back in late January, and it was contested over the mud, but she is also proven over a fast track. She's trained by Belmont, who is, he's kind of been very strategic where he places this filly. She's a petite type in stature, so it's not a concern for me that she did not compete in February and March. So I like the fact that they bring her back here. Mott is very well known to bring her back here because she is owned by Frank Fletcher Racing, and Frank is a very prominent businessman in Little Rock, Arkansas. So anytime she is going to get a chance to run in Frank's backyard, he is going Bill Mott is going to take that opportunity. She certainly has loads of back class, but she is going to have a lot of competition today with Edgeway from the barn of John Sadler, who just comes in off a very nice allowance prep at Santa Anita in early February, and that was coming off a significant layoff. Joel Rosario here today, he's really the only jockey that is coming in to ride the card, other than Florent Giroux, who did have his tack here earlier in the meet. I kind of see it down to these two particular horses, but I'm going to go ahead and give Frank's Roquette the edge simply because of that load of back class, and you always got to root for the hometown owner in Frank Fletcher.
Yeah, it's a great showdown between Frank's Roquette and Edgeway. You throw in Casual, who breaks to the outside of Edgeway, and it makes for a pretty good trio. But those two, Frank's Roquette and Edgeway, worth the price of admission, should be a good one in the carousel. The second stakes race, or race number nine, that's the Oaklawn Mile. And in the previous segment, we heard today's first bet, and the folks at First Bet liking By My Standards, who is 5-2 on the morning line. We know him very, very well. He's a classy horse. This is 1 mile on that main track. Tell me a little bit more about this race, Nancy.
Yeah, By My Standards is a super impressive horse. Last year's Oaklawn Handicap winner, and Gabe Saez, excuse me, he's another rider that is coming in. It's an extremely talented field, and I kind of see it coming down to By My Standards and Rushy. Mike McCarthy has a very good track record for bringing horses into Oaklawn and taking home back to Santa Anita a big, fat check. Might have been just a little deep in the water in the Breeders' Cup Mile. That was the first time taking on older runners. But looking back to that performance in the Pat Day Mile, extremely impressive. So very accomplished at the mile distance. I really do think it's going to come down between Rushy and By My Standards. I know Wells Bayou is training very, very well. I'm not sure if he can get up at the mile distance, but I'm going to go ahead and give the nod to Rushy in this one. Joel Rosario for Mike McCarthy. Again, Mike McCarthy chips in because he thinks he's got a true live shot.
Yeah, hard to bet against anything that Joel Rosario is sitting on right now. And Rushy, 3-1 on the morning line, could be some good value in that Oaklawn Mile. You don't have to wait long to get to the next stakes race.
Okay.
No, go for it. What were you saying?
Oh, no, I was just mentioning the work pattern for Rushy just really jumps off the page. Two bullets in March and then a super hot 59-3 right before he got on the plane to come here. So, I mean, just really just jumps off the page for me.
Talking with Oaklawn handicapper Nancy Holtis. She's on top of everything at Oaklawn Park. She really knows her stuff when it comes to the racing there. And as you can tell, she has a few key selections for you here today. Race number 11 is the race preceding the Arkansas Derby. It is the Grade 3 Count Fleet Sprint Handicap, 6 furlongs. And, Nancy, I have to tell you, if you select anybody but Whitmore in this race, they may just kick you out of Arkansas and you'll have to go to Canada or someplace. They might kick you out of the United States if you pick against Whitmore in this one.
I tell you what, it's like Ollie and Frazier. I mean, Whitmore, he is a celebrity, and I wouldn't be surprised if at some point he gets a plaque on the Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame. He's the defending champ. He's looking for, I believe, his fourth count sleet. And somebody said, well, you know, has he lost a step? You know, he's getting up there. He's eight. And I said, well, CZ Rocket is seven. So it's interesting because if you look at strike power, Steve Asmussen sends this one in. He was fifth in the King Cotton. Might have needed a race under his belt. Didn't get the greatest setup. He was upset, actually, by his stablemate in Boldor. He just ran one of the fastest times at the meet back on March 11th in a very tough allowance optional 100 claimer. He went in 108.4. And if memory serves, that's the fastest six furlongs at the meet. Yesterday, Steve said, and I think he's on your show later today, he told me yesterday, if the track is fast, he's there. Because it could benefit, because CZ Rocket came from off the pace last time in the Hot Springs, and Whitmore is a true closer. I know that Ron Moquet said, you know, we missed those almost 2 weeks of training in February. He really wasn't as prepared as he should have been. He is going to benefit, though, from that inner post, because when Whitmore works in the morning, he is always on the inside of horses. He's more comfy in that position. He is more keyed up going into this race, second off of the layoff. And he's the hometown hero. You can't not root for Whitmore. Like you said, you're going to get kicked out of the state of Arkansas. It's Whitmore and the Razorbacks, Mike. That's what it is. So I'm probably going to wait until the last minute to put my pick in on this particular race because I'm struggling with all of my power. This is the one race that I have not written down my selections. It's between those two horses for me, Whitmore and Strike Power.
All right. Yeah, because you're right, Steve Asmussen.
And one of these stakes, there's going to be an upset. I just feel it.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve Asmussen, you'll hear from him coming up toward the end of the program here today, right around 10:45 Eastern time in the final segment. He'll talk about all of his contenders in the big races coming up later today. Race number 12, that is the main event, the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby. Win and you're in for the Kentucky Derby. $1 million, three-year-olds, mile and an eighth, field of six, and no surprise, Bob Baffert in here with a heavy favorite in Concert Tour, who won the Rebel last time out, undefeated. Nancy, can anybody beat Concert Tour in this spot this afternoon?
Well, every horse is beatable, but I don't think they're going to beat Concert Tour. Bob was on a radio show that I did yesterday, and they're very happy with the way they shipped. He says Concert Tour, he's super easy to train. Should love the stretch out in the distance. And, you know, going in to the Rebel, Bob said he is the second. Concert Tour is the second best horse in the barn. Obviously, the first at that time was Life is Good. And I asked him yesterday, I said, does Concert Tour step up into that number one spot now? He says, you know, he's getting there. So, you know, this is the last prep for the Kentucky Derby. It's only 3 weeks out. You know, last week we saw a lot of preps and a lot of people chose those preps because it's 4 weeks out. Obviously we don't have Lasix this year. And I think that's why we do see a six-horse field. I do think it is Concert Tour's race to lose. Cattle River will try to send today because that did not work in the Rebel. He was ranked and just threw in a clunker. But I don't know if he's as fast as Concert Tour. It's going to be an interesting setup, but I think I wouldn't be surprised to see Joel Rosario go wire to wire again today for Gary and Mary West.
Yeah, it certainly looks like he's holding all of the cards right now. Bob Baffert and, of course, Concert Tour, too. He looks like he has all the gears. And I said earlier, he kind of reminds me a little bit of Justify, considering the fact that we didn't see him debut until his three-year-old season earlier this year in January, and now he's rattled off three consecutive wins, a couple of them in wire-to-wire fashion. I just think he's the fastest horse in the race, and he's going to take a lot of beating in here. And look, he wins this race. Bob Baffert once again back in a great position for the Kentucky Derby. Isn't it remarkable?
Absolutely. I mean, it's kind of the second verse, same as the first type scenario. And it's interesting that, you know, he brought Hoser in for the Rebel just to see what he's capable of, and he wound up having the exacta. So, I mean, very interesting.
Yeah.
I actually did put Super Stock directly underneath Concert Tour. I think he might have needed that race in the Rebel. He split the field. He gets Santana today, and I think this horse is sitting on a really good race. And I love
the
family
Nancy Holtis.
Story. The family story is absolutely wonderful. Steve's son Keith was aboard this horse when he broke his maiden. His dad is co-owner. I mean, that's just awesome. I love the whole story all around.
That's a fantastic story, and would certainly be a welcome win by everybody in Hot Springs of Superstock. Well, except for the folks that, you know, are associated with Concert Tour and Hoosier and Caddo River. They wouldn't like it, but everybody else would certainly enjoy seeing Steve in Superstock in the winner's circle at the Arkansas Derby. Nancy Holtis has been with me here this morning. Nancy, really appreciate the visit, and all the best with that program today. Good luck at the races.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
All right, Nancy Holtis here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. When I come back, it's time for a very special edition of the Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris. Stay with me. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home of the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
And they're into the stretch with Spun to Run, the wonder catch coming to the eight pole. Spun to Run drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made its way up into third, but Spun to Run has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spun to Run, the real deal of the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainesway Stallion Spun to Run. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spun to Run hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple graded stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spun to Run, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Thinking about retirement? Make sure a My Social Security account is a part of your plan. A My Social Security account gives you secure access to your personal earnings history and benefit status. You can find out if you're eligible to receive benefits, compare retirement benefit estimates at different ages or dates, view spousal benefit estimates, and more. Plan for your future. Open a My Social Security account at ssa.gov/myaccount. Social Security. Securing today and tomorrow.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
You get that every time.
Maybe I'll try this now.
Reservations at your favorite restaurant.
Thanks so much for waiting. Your table's ready.
Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed.
Perfect. Thanks.
Get the latest info about COVID-19 vaccines at getvaccineanswers.org. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
On the inside, it's Sir Ivor moving up quickly now. During this stretch, it's Ford Marcy.
Sir Alexander on the outside, Cora Martin. But here comes Sir Ivor, moving with a bull rush. They're in the stretch, an eighth of a mile to go. Sir Alexander, Fort Marcy. But look between horses. Sir Ivor closing with a big rush with Cora Martin on the outside. Here they come. It's Sir Ivor going right by the 2 leaders. Sir Ivor, and there's the finish. Sir Ivor, the winner by 3/4 of a length. Then Sir Alexander and Fort Marcy third in this field of eight.
What a horse, what a moment. In 1968, the Washington D.C. International going to Sir Ivor, who also took the Epsom Derby that same year. Sir Ivor was bred by Alice Headley Chandler. Alice, the first American woman to breed an Epsom Derby winner. It came just 5 years after founding Millridge Farm here in Lexington. Sadly, Alice Headley Chandler passed away on Wednesday at the age of 95. Last year, Alice was inducted into the Horse Racing Hall of Fame, and it was a very special honor for her and for her family, and it was great that her family was able to share that moment with her. Her son, Headley Bell, joined me to talk about her legacy last year after she was inducted, and I thought it was appropriate that we make Alice Headley Chandler this week's Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, considering all of the things that she did to support the horse industry and the impact and the legacy that she leaves behind. And I wanted to play an excerpt of Headley remembering his mother last year while she was still with us and talking about her legacy.
Well, truly what I think about, Mike, and it's always the case, but it's all those that helped you get there. And that's really so very important. And that would start with John Chandler, her partner of 48 years, and who had the great connection with all the Europeans and such like that. So when Sir Ivor wins the Derby, then, you know, the Maktoums and all these people, Prince Khalid, all these people became our relations, and that was important. My brother Reynolds, who was instrumental in diocese standing at Millridge and gone west and paving the way for the early stage and phase of Millridge. Our Bill Thomason, who was with us for 28 years, Duncan McDonald, who was our manager for 38 years, all of our employees who really celebrate Mom each and every day, and certainly our clients. I mean, it's just quite amazing, and they're still with us. Toliato, John, Jerry Moss, the Ammermans, Rich Santulli, on and on, who've been a fabric of the Millridge life. And without the clients and without these people, we all know that you never quite achieve. So for us, it's all a celebration of all those who are part of the Millridge family. And that's truly what she would say, is it's not about me. It's about all those around. And I must say, underlying all of this is that Beaumont land, you know, the land where the horses raced, and the example from her father, who really is her inspiration and the example for her. And so that's what I would say about it.
Headley, if I were to ask your mom, and I don't necessarily feel great about asking you to speak for her necessarily, but if I were to ask her to look back on some of her more memorable moments that she has had in this sport, what are some of those highlights going to be?
You know, Mike, I think she would just, certainly Sir Ivor was huge. And Gone West was huge, and Diocese. But then when you think from 2000 to, you know, our slogan of breeding, raising racehorses, of the 34 grade one winners, and, you know, Point Given was in 2001 and I believe, or 2003, and Spain was right there in 2000, and, you know, the thoroughbred corporate relationship and things like that. But underlying her greatest memory would just be that, you know, as we know, she's a woman in a man's world, and she never really thought like that. She wasn't trying to be the icebreaker or anything like that. She was just trying to be really demonstrate her leadership as her father had done and the love of the horse. And so I think her greatest memory was just to be able to share that land and to share these tremendous horses that have come off this land with all the people that made it what it is. That truly, it wouldn't be one particular thing other than Survivor. Survivor certainly, you know, that's the cornerstone. But just to be able to share it with so many people. She had a passion for the industry, has a passion for the industry, was a leader in every capacity. I mean, the people that she's touched, Stuart Brown, you name it, it's on and on and on of people whom are, you know, key integral part of this industry. And she was just a great example. So her greatest memory would just be the Beaumont experience, the Mill Ridge experience, and the land and the horse.
Alice Headley Chandler leaves behind, and so many memories and so many special moments that she has been part of, and so many people have her to thank for where they are in this business today. And my thanks to Headley for allowing me to use that excerpt to remember his mother, who again passed away on Wednesday. Rest in peace, Alice Headley Chandler, this week's Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris. I'm back to begin hour number two of this 3-hour Equine Forum right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. Martin Pedroza made his return to the saddle a winning one, and in familiar fashion on Thursday, when he went gate to wire aboard first-time starter Cornbread Hill in Keeneland Nightcap, a maiden claiming event for trainer Wesley Ward and owners Ken and Sarah Ramsey. Subbing for Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, Cornbread Hill broke like a shot from his inside post under Pedroza, who was riding his first race since a self-imposed hiatus from racing back in early October of 2019. The son of Hard Spun made every pole a winning one. The 56-year-old Pedroza is less than 100 wins away from 4,000 career victories in a career that has spanned nearly four decades. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back, Hour 2 of three on the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you along for the ride. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, my interview with Nancy Holtis, looking at all the big races at Oaklawn later today on this Arkansas Derby Day, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen at your leisure. It's all there for you, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts, and the podcast of this entire show will be posted for you after we finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern this morning. You know, the road to the Kentucky Derby began 231 days ago with the Iroquois, which was contested beneath the Twin Spires at Churchill Downs. And later today, we wrap it all up. The final two points races, the Lexington Stakes at Keeneland and the Arkansas Derby at Oaklawn, wrapping things up. And we'll know the field of 20 pointed for the Run for the Roses. Of course, there could be defections between now and then. Every owner and all the connections will be on pins and needles as we make our way toward the big day. But we'll know the field, the top 20 horses that are pointed for the Kentucky Derby after those races later today. And this show has plenty of conversation regarding those two races. Coming up in the second hour of the program here, I'm going to look back on last week's big win in the Santa Anita Derby by Rock Your World. I'll do that with John Sadler coming up at 9:30 Eastern. Third hour of the program at 10:30, Mike Stidham will be with me to talk about Proxy in the Lexington Stakes. And then you'll hear from Steve Asmussen coming up right around 10:45 Eastern as well. So plenty more conversation about the prep races still to come. But it is time now to turn our attention north of the border, if you will. Woodbine CEO Jim Lawson has probably had better work weeks than what he's had to endure these past 5 days or so. Nevertheless, he is here. He is equipped with his Tim Hortons coffee, and he is kind enough to join me on this Saturday morning. Jim, you may want to think about adding something a little stronger than just cream and sugar to that coffee, considering the news that you received from the Canadian government this past week, my friend.
Yeah, hi, Mike. Yeah, it certainly pains me. I'm excited this time of year to hear all your talk about the Derby and what a great time of year always for racing, and that's unfortunately not where we're at. It has been a difficult week. The only good news is, for any Canadians listening, we have Roll Up the Rim here at Tim Hortons, and I had a free coffee this morning at least, so that's the end to a very difficult week as the province in Ontario shut down racing pursuant to a stay-at-home order. So we were making what I thought was some great progress to getting racing going on our scheduled date of April 17th, and now that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's very sad news, and I think what makes it even more difficult to swallow, Jim, is the fact that when you look at Woodbine and what your team has been able to accomplish in terms of its safety record when it comes to dealing with COVID-19, it is really impeccable. And it's a shame that the government didn't look at that and say, okay, maybe this is an exception to the rule.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we raced from June until the end of November last year, 4 days a week without a single transmission of COVID on our backstretch. And anyone and most of your listeners are familiar with racetrack backstretches and the number of people that go back there every day, and to think that we would get through a season without any COVID is testament not only to the procedures and protocols that we worked very hard on from the very beginning last March even, and to our to the horse community at Woodbine, who very respectful and very careful, and went through the screening every day, and we have a remarkable safety record, as we did on the harness racing side at Mohawk, Mike, and so this was proven and true and evidenced not only by our own record, but of course the great job that the racetracks in the United States have done in keeping racing safe. And apparently it's just fallen on deaf ears in terms of we've put all the facts in front of them and really struggling to understand why we're not getting more traction.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that, Jim. How much time did you spend? I'm sure it was a substantial amount working with governors and saying, hey, listen, take a look at us and see what we have done and lay out the facts that you just did. How much time and effort went into making that argument?
Well, it's been completely focused. I mean, it's been weeks and dating back to last November. It's been a constant project for us. Dealing with different levels of government and different ministries, and the pertinent parties are, of course, the Premier's office and the Ministry of Health, the Minister of Finance, because there's certainly an economic impact here, and the Minister of Sport. And it just feels like we're caught in between the ministries and no one really prepared to make a decision on this and give us really the time to review and be fair about exactly the documentation and the safety record that's been put in front of them. But I can assure you it's been, Mike, it's just been it's been nonstop, and I would say going back a year, even to get us going racing again last June, there was a big lead up to having us do that, and then it just feels ever since it's been a constant open up and close down and so on, and each time it's been this type of discussion. As I said, I thought we were making progress this time around, and then the stay-at-home order arrived this week, and now we're shut down again. But we're working again very hard for the last 2 or 3 days to put all the documentation in front of them again as to why we should open up as soon as the stay-at-home order expires, which is May the 6th.
Talking with Jim Lawson, who is the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment. Again, as he just laid out, that 28-day stay-at-home order went into effect this past Thursday, and because of that, Woodbine not able to open as scheduled and hoping for early May, all things working out the way that they would hope that they would. Jim, are there other professional sports in Canada that are allowed to continue?
Well, Mike, that's a little bit like poking the bear with me, because we've we have not only made our case, but worked very closely with the other sports, and seemingly racing has been pushed aside. Of course, it's been well documented around here, and especially by us, that the National Hockey League, and I don't wish anyone ill will. I'm happy to watch hockey and see them play, but it's just such an inconsistency with hockey being not only an indoor sport, but a sport that has had a history of COVID issues, that it's been allowed to proceed, and based, I'm told, on their strict protocols. But their strict protocols, we've offered to do the same, but we just can't get anywhere. And I think the real issue this week for us was that the government, in light of the stay-at-home order, as part of the stay-at-home order, allowed golf to proceed. And that is recreational golf. And I think that, I know that there are no procedures and protocols going on at the surrounding golf courses, which are jammed with people, as we've had nice weather up here the last couple of weeks, and there's another nice day today here in Toronto, and the golf courses are going to be jammed with people without masks and without social distancing, as you know, and our racetrack people are saying, whoa, what's going on? How can golf go ahead as an outdoor activity and racing is shut down? So it's a lot of inconsistency. I do appreciate government is in a very, very difficult position with lots of complex issues and complex decisions facing them, but it's hard when speaking on behalf of the horse racing industry in this province to explain to them why, for example, golf can proceed and racing can't.
Very, very difficult. Now, during the stay-at-home order, Jim, Woodbine can still continue to operate with the backstretch being open and with morning training and all of those types of things, correct?
Yeah, absolutely, and that's certainly been a focal point of our discussions with the health authorities, which is really to establish with them, and it's hard to get them to understand what a backstretch looks like and operates, but we might have 1,200, 1,400 people going back there every morning, 7 days a week, and right now we're asking for racing two or three afternoons a week, and with the racing crowd probably being 250 people in the afternoon. So the risk of racing is, relative to what goes on in the morning, is greatly diminished. And yet we're allowed to train in the morning on the backstretch at Woodbine, full training, with well over 1,000 people back there, whereas the racing without spectators is, as you can appreciate, we estimate about 3 people per horse, so 250 to 300 people to run live racing in the afternoon. And of course, we haven't had any COVID issues with running live racing. But the key point is that live racing is a lot riskier proposition than the training that already goes on every morning.
Yeah, it has to be extremely frustrating. I know, not just for you, Jim, but for the entire team there at Woodbine, is, for all the reasons that you just laid out over the past 12 or 13 minutes or so. So where do we go from here? You said 28 days, hoping for early May. I guess it means juggling the stake schedule now and re-coordinating things and distributing purses and all of those types of issues that now come up, right?
Yeah, there's certainly going to be some aspect. The earlier we can get going, the less juggling, of course, that we'll have to do. We'll stay on schedule for our major stakes. There might be some early work. We've canceled the first 6 days. I don't know whether we'll get going as early as May 8th weekend, but we're certainly going to give it a try. It's difficult. I mean, for our people, the horse community, and the threat of being unemployed, we've got a lot of our major trainers who have now chosen not to ship in. The good news for Woodbine this year, we had well over 2,000 stall applications. We had a record number of horses. We had 1,400 ship in up until 3 weeks ago, and it was just things were looking very promising. And now a lot of people are facing prospects of being unemployed, trainers not coming up, and you know, once they start to make alternative arrangements when they don't ship north to Woodbine, it's a question of how long it's going to take to get them back at the start of our season when we do start. So it's a very desperate situation. We're trying to impress that upon the government. Woodbine Entertainment is the economic driver for 15 racetracks in this province, and we've got to impress upon them that unless Woodbine Entertainment gets going both at for Thoroughbreds and at Mohawk, that it's going to have a lasting and negative impact on this industry in this province, which is a big industry in this province, as you can tell from the 15 racetracks alone.
Definitely a financial impact. And Jim, I can imagine that the frustration level has to go to new heights when you consider the fact that throughout the entire pandemic, horse racing here in the United States has been the one sport that has continued and continued successfully for the entire pandemic since it started more than a year ago. That has to make it difficult too.
Yeah, it certainly has. I mean, it's been good for our customers that they've been able to certainly wager on the U.S. tracks. But I'm happy for horse racing that it's been able to proceed and do it safely. So great news there, and good for the sport. But yes, you've hit the nail on the head, Mike, in terms of our frustration and there's really been an established track record for operating racing safely during this period. And it's not just in the United States. It's around the world that racing is going, including in jurisdictions around the world where there have been otherwise been shutdowns. Racing has proceeded because it's been recognized as an outdoor activity that is safe to do. And we'll say it again, just extremely frustrated that we're not getting the proper attention and focus on this for the horse community. I'm really worried about the people. I'm now getting more worried than I ever have been about the health of the industry in this province. And the next step here is just keeping the pressure on. And I use the term starting to because we are going to get more and more vocal because our horse community are with all the things we've just talked about are getting more and more upset about the treatment of the horse racing industry in Ontario.
Well, Jim, keep your head up and keep fighting the good fight. Go grab some Seagram's, some Crown Royal, put it in that coffee of yours. If you need me to send up some bourbon from the Bluegrass, let me know. Happy to do it. Whatever I can do to help get you guys through this. But anything we can do to help here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, you know we're here. And continue with your best efforts, my friend.
We will do, Mike, and thank you. You have just helped. I mean, this is what we're doing now is in addition to having the direct discussions, we are now getting the public aware that this is something that they need to be proactive on, too. And we're going to keep pushing and hopefully get some light at the end of the tunnel and give people some promise and hope at a time of year where racing is exciting and should get going. So all the best to you guys, and we'll talk again soon. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Jim Lawson, CEO of Woodbine, dealing with an extremely difficult situation there. And listen, you have to understand both sides of this, but you also have to feel for the horse industry there in that province and in that country, because it is really being hit hard. And as Jim pointed out, when other things are allowed to open, it's the same thing we saw here in the United States. Everybody is dealing with this as best they can, and Jim and his team doing everything they can to represent horse racing and fight that fight for horse racing there and for the horsemen, the horsewomen that are impacted by this, the jobs that are lost, the list goes on and on. And now it's a trickle-down effect, as he just mentioned. So a lot of different layers to this, and my thanks to Jim for being with me to spell it all out after that news came out earlier this week. All right, coming up next, we'll take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. That's a segment that has become extremely popular with this new three-hour format. You won't want to miss it. John Sadler coming up at 9:30. Mike Stidham still to come at 10:30 to talk about his runner in the Lexington Stakes that is Proxy, and he might even take a look back on a little race that he won called the Dubai World Cup. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince's value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
HRRN is live online. Go to our website at horseracingradio.net to stream all of our broadcasts live or listen to the show archives anytime. Read our blogs, get the latest news, and see our entire broadcast schedule. It's all there at horseracingradio.net. And follow us on Twitter at HRRN and like our page on Facebook. Search Apple Podcasts for HRRN and download our latest shows. HRRN is home to racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is at horseracingradio.net.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Yankee Victor on the outside puts ahead in front, midway on the turn, and Texas Glitter is second by a length and a half to Charismatic. Epic Honor is fourth on the inside of Finder's Gold, who's still over four lengths off the lead. Six furlongs and 10 and 3, they move off the far turn. Yankee Victor and Charismatic on the outside have gotten by Texas Glitter, and Finder's Gold and Epic Honor still have 3.5 lengths to make up as Charismatic strides forward in the final furlong and wrestles the lead away from Yankee Victor. Coming to the line of the Coolmore Lexington is going to be Charismatic in front.
That's Kurt Becker with the call of the Lexington Stakes 1999 version. Charismatic winning that day, punching his ticket to the Run for the Roses. As we know, he would go on to take the Kentucky Derby that year, giving Dwayne Lucas the final of his four Kentucky Derby victories to this point. And you think about horse racing history, you think about Dwayne Lucas because he has had such an impact in our sport, and you know he's been an icon in the world of thoroughbred racing. So he is tied to horse racing history as much as anybody. And with that said, it is time now to join Kurt Becker for this week's Stroll Through Racing History, which is presented by Lane's End and Keeneland.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was a striking brown colt who carried the hopes of the southwestern United States, a New Mexico bred who rose from relative obscurity to compete in the Triple Crown Series. And 40 years ago this month, he captured his lone Grade 1 victory in the Arkansas Derby. His name was Bold Ego. Bred by J.D. Barton's Double B Ranch and owned by Barton in partnership with heart surgeon Joseph Kidd and real estate developer James Howard, Bold Ego was born in New Mexico on March 2, 1978. He was the only foal ever sired by Bold Tactics, who had been a track record-setting sprinter in Chicago. Bold Ego began his racing career under the care of trainer Cliff Lambert, who guided the colt to 7 wins and 8 starts and earnings of $175,000 during his juvenile campaign. Included in that string was a win in the $200,000 Riley Allison Futurity at Sunland Park in El Paso, one of the most prestigious races in the Southwest. But Lambert thought the colt was destined for even bigger things, and so he recommended that Bold Ego be sent to Jack Van Berg, a trainer whom he believed could add distance and seasoning to the colt and make him ready to compete at racing's highest level. Van Berg, who was 44 years old at the time, was a native of Columbus, Nebraska. He was the son of Hall of Fame trainer Marion Van Berg, and he was in the process of building his own Hall of Fame career. Still, it would take time for Van Berg to help Bold Ego realize his full potential. In January of 1981, and now in Van Berg's barn, Bold Ego made his 3-year-old debut in California, racing in the San Miguel Stakes before a crowd of 20,000 at Santa Anita. He led much of the way in the 6-furlong test before fading to 5th over a deep and tiring track. His next start would come in Arkansas in the 6-furlong Mountain Valley Handicap at Oaklawn Park. The result? Another 5th-place finish. Despite the disappointments, Van Berg and his staff did not become discouraged, and their faith was about to be rewarded. With Van Berg's assistant Dennis Weary in charge, Bold Ego won the Southwest Handicap at Oaklawn at odds of 7-2, drawing clear to win by 6 lengths on a sloppy track under jockey John Lively. 2 weeks later, Bold Ego stretched beyond 6 furlongs for the first time and won the Rebel Handicap, leading all the way to win by 5.5 lengths at a distance of 1 mile and 70 yards before a crowd of 54,000. An even bigger test would come on April 11, 1981, when Bold Ego went to the post in the Arkansas Derby at 1 1/8. It would mark the first time that the Arkansas Derby had ever been contested as a Grade 1 event, and a crowd of 62,000 was on hand to make Bold Ego the favorite. And once again, Bold Ego responded with a front-running victory, making for his 3rd consecutive win at Oaklawn. The performance was enough to convince Van Berg that Bold Ego deserved a shot at the Kentucky Derby. Bold Ego would arrive at Churchill Downs as the richest and winningest horse of the 20 who were entered for the 107th Run for the Roses, and he would be the first Derby starter ever for Van Berg. But a speed battle with Top Avenger and Proud Appeal would take its toll, and Bold Ego would fade to finish 10th. 2 weeks later, Van Berg took Bold Ego to Pimlico for the Preakness Stakes. After leading to the top of the stretch, Bold Ego fought hard in the final furlong before finishing 2nd by a neck to Derby winner Pleasant Colony. It was a courageous performance, and it was arguably the greatest of the colt's career. Following an 11th place finish in the Belmont, Van Berg gave Bold Ego a 4-month rest before returning him to the races in October. 1 year later, in November of 1982, Bold Ego was retired from racing after a victory at Hollywood Park. He returned to the Southwest to begin his stallion career, and he sired 17 stakes winners before his death in Arizona on June 30th, 1997, at the age of 19. Bold Ego, the New Mexico bred who rose through racing's ranks some 4 decades ago. We remember him on the 40th anniversary of his win in the Arkansas Derby. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Oh, what a fantastic story. Great stuff from Kurt Becker, as it is every single week in that Stroll Through Racing History segment. My thanks to Kurt for putting that together each and every week, and make sure you tune in to hear it every Saturday morning here on the Equine Forum. Bold Ego. That's a story that many of us, myself included, didn't even know. I didn't know that story of Bold Ego. It was fantastic. I asked the poll question today. It's kind of a question of the day more than a poll question, at HRN on Twitter. Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook is another way that you can weigh in and let me know your thoughts. You can also email the show if you don't do social media, mike@horseracingradio.net. But the question of the day is quite simple. If you could pick one jockey, past or present, to ride your horse in the Kentucky Derby, who would it be? Who would you choose? Could be anybody. Johnny V getting a vote. The Kid, Steve Cawthon, Sandy Hawley with a vote. Ron Turcott, Gary Stevens, Calvin Burrell, another for Stevens. Angel Cordero, another for Stevens. And Pat Day. So right now, Gary Stevens, the leader in the clubhouse. Jerry Bailey, Eddie Arcaro, they're still coming in. Johnny V in the present. A couple of emails, well, a few of them actually, Gary Stevens, Bill Hartack, and Jimmy Wingfield. So it looks like Gary Stevens, the most popular choice among those of you who would pick one jockey to ride your horse in the Kentucky Derby. Fantastic stuff. Keep the responses coming. I'll try to update the poll question again later in the show. When I come back, we'll go to John Sadler, who last week saddled Rock Your World in the Santa Anita Derby. It was successful. He rocked everybody's world, winning by more than 4 lengths. He'll talk about it next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Bet any track from anywhere with Keeneland Select. Keeneland Select offers something no other wagering platform does, a way to give back to the sport you love through Keeneland's reinvestment in thoroughbred racing and fan development. Become eligible for a $100 sign-up bonus after you bet $300.
and $50 for every $5,000 wagered with code HRRN10 at KeenelandSelect.com. Or download the app free on the App Store or Google Play.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're at the top of the stretch, and Rock Your World hugs the rail, leads it by two lengths still. Dream Shake on the outside, Medina Spirit trying hard. It's Rock Your World in command. Medina Spirit making no progress, and it's going to be Rock Your World to take them all the way in the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby. He's undefeated and wins by four under Roberto Rispoli. Medina Spirit was second, Dream Shake third, and then it was Defunded, followed by Law Professor. The running time, 1:49.17.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was Frank Miramati with the call of last weekend's Santa Anita Derby, which has been, in recent years, the most productive Kentucky Derby prep race, if you want to wear the roses. And that's music to the ears of my next guest, who is trainer John Sadler. A busy morning for him, so we won't keep him very long, but he joins me now here on HRRN. John, appreciate the visit.
Good morning.
Good morning, and congratulations on the big win last week. Some horse, huh?
Yeah, I'm a really happy horse, run a big race, and came out in really good shape.
Could you ever have expected that type of performance? Really?
I got Baffert over here with me this morning. He's not taking it well.
I'm sure he's not. He gets. Hey, tell him he gets enough of those. He can give you one once in a while.
I tell him that all the time. Yeah. So anyway, we thought he'd run well on the dirt, and his performance kind of exceeded our expectations.
You know, ever since he crossed the finish line, it seems like I've seen multiple reports that people are now comparing him to Barbaro and to Big Brown, considering the fact that he's gone turf to dirt, and he certainly looks like that type of horse. But he's got a lot to do to be counted among those types of horses, John. But are those comparisons, at least at this point in his career, somewhat justified?
It's a little early. It's only his third start, and he shows high promise, and we'll hope he continues on. So what I get excited about is, being so close to Candy Ride, watched him run here, saw all his races, they can run on any surface, it's Candy Ride. So I'm not surprised that he handled the dirt well.
Was this the plan all along, to get him started on turf and then make that move and take a shot on dirt at some point?
Pretty much. That was the plan. I thought it would be a nice way to start him off. You're 100% sure that he's going to be good on grass. So start with something. We wanted to get a couple of the ideas, get a couple of nice races in him, and then take our shot before the Derby.
What's the plan now over the course of the next 3 weeks?
He'll have two works. He'll work a week from today and then the following week, and then the 2 weeks from today on the Sunday, he'll go into Churchill and be there, Sunday afternoon getting ready for the Saturday race.
You know, there's two other storylines associated with this horse, John. Not the fact, certainly the fact that you could win your first Kentucky Derby with a horse like Rock Your World, but Ron McAnally, who is a Hall of Fame trainer, who is the breeder of this horse, along with his wife, Deborah, 0-for-10 in the Kentucky Derby as a trainer, you could give him his first Derby win as a breeder. How cool would that be?
That'd be great. Ronnie has been one of the institutions here in California for his lifetime. I've known him for my whole career here, always a gentleman. And, you know, what a wonderful career he's had. You know, if you look at the horses he's trained, you know, there's races named after him. There's a statue for one of the horses he trained right here in the paddock at Santa Anita. And this, if you looked at his list of good horses, it just knocked you down.
Well, it would be fantastic for him. It would be great for you, too. And it would be great for young jockey Umberto Rispoli, who is so talented. It will be his first Kentucky Derby, too. What do you tell him about what he's going to experience in Louisville?
Well, he's quite a student. He studies a lot. You know, we're going to have a couple of meetings before we go over there. There's precedent, you know, for the jock, you know, horse guys that haven't been there a bunch of years. A lot of riders have gone in and done very well there on maybe their first ride over the track or two. You know, Mario Gutierrez comes to mind. I think when he rode, I'll have another, you know, so it could happen.
John, four of the last nine Derby winners have prepped in the Santa Anita Derby. Why has that been such a productive prep in recent years, do you think?
Well, because, I mean, it's, you know, it's Baffert country out here. And, you know, he's got all the best horses. So it's not surprising that, you know, they come out of here. And, you know, we have a good three-year-old program. We got good weather. You know, that's why, you know, horses seem to thrive here in the winter.
Well, this will be the fifth horse that you have saddled in the Kentucky Derby. It'll be your fourth trip to Louisville for the Run for the Roses. You had two of them in the 2010 running with Sydney's Candy and Line of David. Is there anything you take away from that past experience of having been there, done that, that helps you now with Rock Your World as you get ready for this year?
Oh, I think so. You know, at any time that you've done something a few times, you have ideas how you'd want to do it the next time. You know, and I want to enjoy it a lot. I know that this year because I realize how hard it is. You know, you can catch bad weather. You know, a lot of things can go wrong. You get wiped out at the start. So, you know, having been there, I know how tough it is, and I really want to enjoy the experience. And obviously, this is the best chance I've gone in with. Some of those other horses were prices, and if you look at the year of Sydney's Candy, it was just, you know, a sea of slop. So you have weather to contend with, post, a lot of stuff. So I want to go over there with a good horse and enjoy it.
John, you are two wins shy of the 20. You're two wins shy of the 2,600 win milestone. You've won so many big races. I've had trainers tell me, you know, the Derby's just another race. And I've had other trainers say, man, I want to win the Derby more than anything. How about for you? Where does it stand in your on your resume? Where would it stand?
Oh, I'd love to win it. Don't get me wrong. Like I said, I you know, I'd love to win the Derby, and you know, I mean, it's not a huge program for us because, you know, to buy those expensive colts is really tough. So, well, I don't have a lot of them, but I'd love to win the race, no doubt.
Well, John, I know you're busy. I'll let you go. I told you I wouldn't keep you very long. Appreciate the visit. All the best with Rock Your World. We'll look forward to seeing you in Louisville in a few weeks.
Okay, thank you.
All right, John Sadler here on HRN. Standing there with Bob Baffert when I called him. How perfect was that? Baffert not happy that Rock Your World stole the Santa Anita Derby from him last week. And, you know, not only did Rock Your World steal the race, if you want to look at it like that, he went wire to wire. But he did it in dominant fashion. Baffert second with Medina Spirit, who we'll see in the Kentucky Derby too, I would imagine. Medina Spirit's a good, good horse. Really good horse. But Rock Your World made him look ordinary. He made everybody look ordinary in that race. Barbaro, Big Brown. Two names that people have been throwing around talking about Rock Your World. I'm sure John Sadler will take that. And as he said, it's early. You're talking about a horse that didn't make his three-year-old debut until earlier this year, right? We didn't see Rock Your World until New Year's Day, January 1st. And you could say, oh, okay, well, it's almost his two-year-old season. It was one day off. If he had debuted on December 31st, are we talking about this as being a big deal? And after Justify snapped the curse of Apollo and proved that you could win the Kentucky Derby, and by the way, a Triple Crown, without having a start at two, horses like Rock Your World can now put that behind them and out of their mind. But the comparisons to Barbaro and to Big Brown are very interesting. I don't think they're all that crazy. Those are two horses that went on to prove that they were brilliant racehorses. Rock Your World looks like he could be brilliant, but he still has to continue to move forward. And when I asked John that question, if those comparisons were justified at this point in his career, you heard John say, well, it's still early. And it is still early. But it was early for Big Brown, and it was early for Barbaro at 1.2. We'll see if Rock Your World can continue on. And the cool storyline is, you heard me ask him about Ron McAnally, his wife Deborah, the breeders of Rock Your World. This is a horse that has McAnally's fingerprints all over it. McAnally trained Candy Ride. He trained the Dam, Charm the Maker, who's an Empire Maker mare. So his fingerprints are all over that pedigree and that breeding. And then for Umberto Rispoli, who John talked about being a student of the game, he'll be fine. He'll be riding in his first Kentucky Derby. He'll have the butterflies. He'll come out, probably get choked up a little bit when they play my old Kentucky home. But he's ultra-talented, and he's a really smart kid. He'll handle it just fine. And we'll see if Rock Your World can handle it fine coming up in 3 weeks. As a matter of fact, if you're just joining me and you haven't heard the Derby countdown, 21 days, 9 hours, 2 minutes, and 43 seconds until the Run for the Roses. Again, all of our coverage begins the Tuesday prior to the Kentucky Derby. That is Tuesday, April 27th, the first of 3 Derby countdown shows presented by Hillendale, which will be hosted live from the Backside Media area. You remember last year, because of COVID, we could not be on site for those shows. We will be back on site this year. Our tent will be set up in that Backside Media area. You'll hear from owners and trainers and jockeys. You'll hear from handicappers and hosts Bobby Newman and Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four. That's right. We'll take you through the workouts every morning, too. The workouts are going to be done just prior to them coming on the air at 8 o'clock. So they'll get a chance to immediately come on and tell you what they saw on the racetrack, who looked good, who was traveling well over the surface. They are both so good with that. So make sure you're tuned in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning. That's April 27, 28, and 29, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern for the Derby Countdown shows. On Friday afternoon, our Kentucky Oaks broadcast comes your way. You'll hear the Oaks. You'll hear all the big races before it. And then on Saturday, this show, a Derby edition of the Equine Forum, and then the Derby undercard coverage beginning at 3 o'clock Eastern, and at 5 o'clock our exclusive radio coverage of the Kentucky Derby in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. This, the, 11th consecutive year that we have been your home for the Kentucky Derby. Wow, pretty special. Really proud and privileged to be able to say that, and you'll want to make sure you go to horseracingradio.net to see our complete Derby Week broadcast schedule. All right, still to come, you'll hear from Sean Clancy with our In the Room segment as the Champion Steeplechase jockey sits down each week with a current rider, a former rider. This week it's John Court who stops by for a visit. Mike Stidham will be with me at 10:30. Steve Asmussen, you'll hear from him coming up at 10:45 Eastern. So still a lot to come. Stay with me. It's the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud to once again be your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. They're off in the Preakness. They're off in the Belmont Stakes.
You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
The Department of Veterans Affairs is so innovative, it not only improves the lives of veterans, it transforms the lives of healthcare professionals who serve them with access to the latest technologies and remarkable benefits. Transform your future at vacareers.va.gov.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal. Which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear. The vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit getvaccineanswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's getvaccineanswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. Every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts. Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Shackleford who still leads. Here's Nero on the outside, and Animal Kingdom is pouncing late on the John Velasquez. It's now Animal Kingdom on the outside who goes the lead for John Velasquez, and he's going clear by two lengths and running to the line. Animal Kingdom wins the derby. Nero in second. In third came Mucho Macho Man. In fourth was Shackleford. And then Master of Hounds, Santiva, brilliant speed. And then Pants on Fire and Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion and John Velasquez who took Derby 137.
Mark Johnson with the call. Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion. That was 10 years ago, 2011. The Animal Kingdom roared home to victory. We know he would go on to be a pretty darn good racehorse. He, of course, came out of the, well, it used to be the Lane's End Stakes, I guess. Now the Jeff Ruby Stakes up at Turfway. Came out of the synthetic to go on and win. And that is what Like the King is going to try to do this year for trainer Wesley Ward. And when you take a look at Like the King, there have been some people who said, yeah, okay, he has no chance. He comes out of the synthetic races. Now he has to go to the main track. Well, he broke his maiden at Belterra Park back last September. And a horse that a lot of people think can go on. And he doesn't have to be on a synthetic surface necessarily. Now, that maiden win was on the grass. So he does have to prove that he can win on the main track. But people were saying the same thing about Animal Kingdom, and he rolled the victory. And when you look at Like the King, you see the name Palace Malice as his sire. He's out of a Corinthian mare. Distance shouldn't be a problem for him. And for Wesley Ward, who has had so many top youngsters in his career, he is known for doing great work with his two-year-olds. This will be his first starter in the Kentucky Derby. And currently sitting in the third position in terms of the points is Like the King. So no problem there. He's in by virtue of that win up at Turfway Park. If you're wondering about the top 10 on the leaderboard right now as it stands, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, Like the King, Known Agenda, Rock Your World, Bourbonic, huge upsetter of the Wood Memorial last week, Medina Spirit, Midnight Bourbon, Weyburn, and Mandaloon. There's your top 10. Concert Tour, who is the heavy favorite in the Arkansas Derby later today, is sitting in 11th. But, you know, all of those horses are into this year's Kentucky Derby if they continue to stay healthy and progress over the next 3 weeks or so. A horse like Proxy, who is the favorite in the Lexington Stakes today, and again, you're going to hear from his trainer, Mike Stidham, coming up in the third hour of the program. A horse like Proxy has 34 points. He's currently holding down the 20th position. He can get bumped out of that 20th position today, depending on what happens in the Arkansas Derby and what happens certainly in the Lexington Stakes. So he's going to need a big effort today. And when I ask, when Mike comes on later, I'll ask him, does he have to win? Is it automatic? You know, if he runs second and ekes in as the 20th horse in the field, do you still go on with him? We'll see. I'll talk to Mike about that coming up later on in the program. Don't forget that recently I started telling you about the brand new outdoors superstore. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. And I've told you the past several weeks, too, that I have spent my entire life really with three passions: horse racing, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the outdoors. So if I'm not focused on the Steelers and if I'm not at the racetrack, you can pretty much bet I'm out in the woods somewhere. So trust me when I tell you that if you haven't been there yet, you need to go. The Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. If you love hunting, if you love fishing, you need to check them out. Just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, the store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. And really, the store has everything you need, from hunting deer, turkeys, turkey season opening next week here in the Bluegrass, ducks, and so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges. So stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. Well, it's time now for our weekly Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Huge day on the Derby Trail last Saturday as there was a trio of three-year-old stakes worth 170 qualifying points to the top four finishers, respectively. At Keeneland, undefeated two-year-old champ Essential Quality was sent off the heavy favorite against eight rivals in the Bluegrass Stakes. He broke alertly and stalked the early pace of Chad Brown's Highly Motivated. Those two pulled away from the others, turning for home, with Essential Quality finally grinding away at the lead and getting up to win by a neck. Bob Baffert's Medina Spirit was sent to the post as the odds-on favorite in the Santa Anita Derby. But it was John Sadler's undefeated Rock Your World who handled the switch from turf to dirt and easily wired the field in his main track debut. Medina Spirit ran well, but was second best. Aqueduct's signature race, the Wood Memorial, looked like a wide-open affair on paper. Prevalence, risk-taking, and crowded trade all took serious money, but it was the longest shot in the field, Bourbonic, who made the last run and got the last laugh. He stormed by the field in the stretch to get the win in by far the best race of his young career, and he was 72-1. The final two Derby qualifiers take place today with the Arkansas Derby and Lexington Stakes. At Oaklawn, Concert Tour leads a field of six that mainly consists of horses he soundly defeated in the Rebel Stakes last month. He should be solidly favored to remain undefeated and head to Churchill Downs as one of the top Kentucky Derby choices. He'll once again take on Caddo River, Hosier, and Get Her Number. Keeneland hosts the Grade 3 Lexington, where Proxy looks to secure his spot in the Kentucky Derby. He faces nine others, including Hockey Dad, who needs a win to have a realistic chance to qualify. Up-and-comers Swiftsure, Noble Reflection, and Bezos also look like contenders. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Lord Nelson, one of only three sprinters last decade to win three Grade Ones in a single year, along with champions Run Happy and Mattoli. His three consecutive Grade One victories included a stakes record performance in 107 3/5 in Del Mar's historic Bing Crosby Stakes.
Lord Nelson, a dominating performance, easy in the Bing Crosby.
An unrivaled blend of elite speed and pedigree. Lord Nelson, Pulpit's last great son. Look for his first crop selling at the upcoming two-year-olds and training sales. Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number one, Essential Quality, undefeated, the two-year-old champ. He heads to Kentucky as the probable favorite for the Roses. Number two, Concert Tour, also undefeated, impressive winner of the Rebel. He'll be favored in today's Arkansas Derby. Number three, Known Agenda. He was an impressive winner of the Florida Derby in his last start. Number four, Highly Motivated. He gave Essential Quality all he could handle in the Bluegrass and continues to improve. And number five is Rock Your World. He's undefeated and the winner of the Santa Anita Derby. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
All right, my thanks to Bobby Newman and to Spendthrift. And again, that top five list for Bobby pretty much set at this point. But we'll see what changes, if anything, over the course of the next 3 weeks as we make our way down the road to Louisville, edging ever closer here on the Horse Racing Radio Network as your official home of the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. Now just 21 days, 8 hours, 48 minutes, and 10 seconds away from the greatest 2 minutes in sports. Well, a couple minutes away from the kickoff of hour number three, and really looking forward to the content coming up in that hour. Another chance to remind you that our Derby coverage begins the Tuesday prior to the Kentucky Derby. You can head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, to take a look at the entire broadcast schedule for that week. It's all posted for you on our website now, horseracingradio.net. So many of you are taking time to weigh in on the question of the day, which is available on our Twitter feed, at HRN, also Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And some of you who don't do social media have emailed the show to let me know which jockey, past or present, if you could only choose one, which jockey are you going to choose to ride your horse in the Kentucky Derby? And I got to tell you, unless I'm missing it, and I'm flipping through right now, I have not seen, well, there we go. I was just going to say it, that I have not seen a vote for Eddie Arcaro, which was really surprising to me. And I only see one person who commented and said that Eddie Arcaro, if they were choosing a jockey from the past, would be the one. Johnny V in the present. Hard to argue with either one of those two, but I was shocked that nobody had responded with Eddie Arcaro. But now I do see one. Eddie Arcaro and Bill Hartack are tied at the top of the list with five Derby victories apiece. And so far, one vote for Hartack, one vote for Arcaro. I did see a vote or two for Bill Shoemaker, who is third on the all-time list with four wins in the Kentucky Derby. And Isaac Murphy and Earl Sandy at three. Angel Cordero Jr. at three, Gary Stevens at three, Kent DeSormo, Calvin Burrell, Victor Espinoza, Johnny V, all with three wins in the Kentucky Derby. Keep them coming. Let me know your thoughts on that question. That's going to wrap up the first 2 hours of the show here this morning. Hour 3 kicks off next with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy, a unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with veteran rider John Court. Trainer Mike Stidham will be with me at 10:30. And you'll hear from Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen as he looks ahead to all of his runners in today's stakes. That interview comes your way at 10:45 Eastern Time. If your local station is leaving us right now, you can continue listening to the third hour on Sirius 219, XM 201, in Louisville, Kentucky on ESPN 680 or streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum rolls on next right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Concert tour, five lengths in front. Hozier Mike gets second. Eight Rebels for Baffert Concert Tour. Wow, big run. Four and a half. Hozier second. Big Lake third. Maybe Superstock for fourth.
Superstock, I thought he ran a sneaky good race in the Rebel. I could have very well been second that day. The inside looked like the place to be. Hozier got there. He didn't. Talk a little bit about Superstock.
I agree with you in your assessment of the Rebel. The fact that he kept coming, I think, speaks extremely well for him moving forward. And I love how he's trained since the Rebel going into the Arkansas Derby. Well aware of how fast the horses in there are.
Potsy coming down for the final furlong. Shifts out on good first. Hendrick charging hard on the outside. Assumption being outpaced by this trio. Just being led by Proxy, who's dug his heels in for Angel Suarez. It's the Tapit Colt. And Proxy finding for the finish, will beat good first and Hendrick home. Proxy by 2.5.
In the final furlong, Scott O'Dell's soul is in front. Reinvested his second on the outside. That's Laser Light. Here you are, Scott O'Dell's soul with the lead. Gato Del Sol wins it by 2.5.
Welcome to the Equine Forum. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour 3 rolling on. Thanks for staying with me on a very busy morning. 21 days away from the Run for the Roses, a Derby trail that began 231 days ago, comes to an end with the final two points races later today, the Lexington Stakes at Keeneland, and, of course, the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby in Hot Springs, Arkansas. If you missed any portion of the show, including my interview with Nancy Holtis, the handicapper at Oaklawn, previewing the Arkansas Derby and all the stakes races preceding it today, all you have to do is head to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the podcast. That will be available at your leisure shortly after we finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern. The show's also included my interview with Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine, who talked about the very difficult situation they are facing with the new stay-at-home order in place for the next 28 days, having to postpone their opening day, which was set for next weekend. Not going to be able to open until maybe that first weekend in May. You can hear that interview later as well on the podcast. John Sadler was with me in the second hour of the program. That was at 9:30 Eastern Time. Mike Stidham still to come at 10:30, Steve Asmussen at 10:45. So a lot of things still to come, a lot of things that have come your way already. We were expecting Eddie Delahousse to be with us, and unfortunately he was unable to do so. He actually literally just sent me a text a few moments ago saying that he was apologizing for missing that segment in the first half of the program. They had a pretty bad storm in Louisiana and lost electricity. And he was dealing with a bunch of things down there, so unable to make it on the program today. We'll catch up with Eddie D. later on, but hope things are well for him and for everybody dealing with those storms in Louisiana today. Well, you take a look at what is on the line. And I told you about Proxy, the favorite, morning line favorite in today's Lexington Stakes. He has to run a big race. Concert Tour is the heavy favorite in Arkansas. You also have another pretty good one at Keeneland today. And I haven't spent much time talking about this race yet, but it's the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley. It's actually the featured race of the day. The Lexington Stakes, because it's a Derby prep, gets a lot of attention, but that race is just a Grade 3, and it's the race preceding the Jenny Wiley, the undercard stake, if you will. The Jenny Wiley, only six horses. It's race 10, 6:03 Eastern today in the Bluegrass. mile and a 16th on a turf course. We are expecting rain here in central Kentucky today, so don't be surprised if the turf course has some give to it. Michelin for Mike Stidham. And I'll ask him about Michelin when he joins me, too. The Godolphin color bearer, 2-1 on the morning line from the inside post. She comes out of that big win in the grade 2 Hillsboro at Tampa last time out. You have Tama here, number 2, 5-2 on the morning line for Chad Brown. By the way, congrats to Chad and the Connections of Raging Bull for winning the Makers 46 mile yesterday. Juliet Foxtrot, 7-2. And then Etoile, 3-1. Those are the inside four horses in the six-horse field. Very well-balanced, very difficult to separate, all very capable on their day. Should be a really good race. Again, this is a grade one. Coolmore, Jenny Wiley coming up. Race 10, 6:03 Eastern, 3:03 on the West Coast. All right, well, with that said, it is time now to go in the room with Sean Clancy, this segment presented by ThisIsHorseRacing.com. This week, the former champion steeplechase jockey brings you his unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with journeyman John Court.
Nightlight still in hand by John Court.
John Court to win it.
Going to the Breeders' Cup, wins it by a half under. A good ride by John Court.
John Court to win it.
Good ride by John Court. Good ride by John Court. Good ride by John Court.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey John Court. The 60-year-old has notched 4,203 wins and over $108 million in a career that began at Centennial Park in 1980 and is still going strong at Oaklawn Park this winter. Court stands tall as the 63rd leading jockey in wins and 53rd in earnings. Stakes wins on the likes of Wise Dan, Will Take Charge, Arch Arch Arch, and Loi de Sanimo have highlighted a stellar career. Joining me in the River D Stable studio is John Court. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, thank you, Sean. It's nice to be here.
Take us back to the beginning. Your dad's an architect, your mother is a nurse, and you say, right, I want to be a jockey. I mean, take us back to the beginning of how all this happened.
Oh, boy, we are going back. Let me go to the archives there. Well, ever since I was knee-high, riding on the spring horse, I was always saying I wanted to be a jockey. So I am that guy that followed his childhood dream through school. And my father and mother had horses in the backyard, pleasure horses, but it wasn't too far down the road. We had thoroughbreds that were retired at Hunter Jumper Farms, and I was always over there doing odd jobs, making a couple bucks, working after school. And from that point on, when I was old enough to drive and out of high school, I went right to the track, and as an exercise rider when I showed up, still learning. And then within a year and a half or two, I can't remember the exact time of being around the tracks, I took my license out and started riding races. Here I am today.
Wow, that's an amazing journey. Take us to, how did you get to Centennial Park in Colorado? You grew up in Florida. How did you get there? Somebody say, come on, let's go to Colorado, or how did that happen?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had some connections across the country that were well into horse racing, and I was invited out to Colorado at Centennial, and immediately got on the track to gallop. I think that the fact I went to Colorado was what with my research. And I always felt like even though I was on the farms around Ocala, Florida, galloping horses and breaking yearlings horses that were turnout, and then they'd send them back to the track, they always said, well, when you come to the track, like at Miami, if I started Gulfstream, I would have to start at the bottom at the track, and maybe before they let me gallop at the track, I would start walking hot, and they would see if I had the skills and I could work my way into the saddle. And, of course, you know, young and eager as I was, when I was told you could come right to the track here and we'll just put you galloping horses right away, well, that was the avenue I pursued, with the opportunity to travel to other tracks, which I ventured through Arizona at Turf Paradise and then on to Santa Anita as a gallop boy, and worked my way back. And on my way back through the country working towards the East Coast, I picked up Centennial on the way back and figured as good a time as any to start riding some races before I worked my way back. Ended up in Louisiana and Kentucky and Florida, and pretty much kept Kentucky and Arkansas as the circuit I enjoyed the most. So it seemed competitive, and it was lucrative enough for me as a rider. So that's how I got here to this day, still pursuing that even though my career has taken me to other racing venues across the country, I've come back to my original circuit, and that's Kentucky, and as well as Louisiana, and definitely Arkansas.
And no doubt, I mean the career you've made from Centennial to the circuit you're on now. I mean, when did you think, wow, I've made the big stage? I mean, was there a time that when you got to a place like Churchill Downs and kind of looked around and said, wow, I've made it? Or what was that journey like?
Oh yeah, definitely. When I got to Churchill Downs, I remember as a child watching the place and just the nostalgia and the history there. It definitely resonated within me. And then when I was able to not only win races, but move on up into winning stakes races and then graded races, that's when I thought, well, I made it. It didn't come easy, and I kind of considered it was something I had to carve out over the course of the decades. But it's been such a thrill to be able to pull off these high-caliber races and ride these, even at the low end, where you're riding claiming races and then you see yourself riding graded races, that it, the thrill is always there, and I just continue to pursue it. As long as I'm competing and producing the results that my owners and clients are looking for, it's keeping the game real and fun and very enjoyable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, what's the motivation these days? Is it just winning, or the competing, or the numbers? I mean, do you look at the numbers and say, I want to try to climb even higher than I've already gotten? What motivates you today?
I would say it's a combination of all of it, to be honest with you, Sean. The numbers, I definitely like to improve them, but sometimes I always consider, well, I'm not in a position to turn away such business, and I do hold the Northern Hemisphere trifecta record of riding long shots. So just the competitiveness is probably what keeps me the enjoyment and staying competitive. That really is probably one of the biggest motivations, and I'd have to say the fact that the excitement of the competition is just still as real as it is today as it was 40 years ago.
Wow. Have you ever been close to retiring? I mean, has there been a time where you're struggling or injuries or different something happened where you think, man, maybe I've had enough? Have you ever come close to that?
Absolutely. I've been in situations even last year at this time I thought I was toasted, but I didn't want to go out with injury. I'd like it to be my own doing and my own choices. But, yeah, I've entertained the thought of many a time, and I've had other people entertain it for me, for that matter. But to be honest with you, it is something I know that I'm in my golden years of riding, but I don't really have any plans to retire anytime soon. But I know at riding at 60 at this level, it's right around the corner. I just hope that the day will come that I'll recognize it's time to step down and do it gracefully.
Yeah, the most important thing is to retire on your own terms, I think. And I was able to retire basically on my own terms. I was, had injuries, but I was kind of getting to the point where I'd had enough. But and that's something I think that's important for all jockeys, to be able to retire on your own terms.
Yeah, I like that. You did it impressively, too, by the way, I will say. I enjoyed watching you ride. And I was telling someone the other day about some of you guys in the jocks room. That was pretty interesting, and I enjoyed that back in the day.
Yeah,
you guys would stroll through there, and then we'd watch you guys ride, and I was like, they think us flat jockeys are crazy.
Yeah, exactly. I'll never forget sitting in the sauna in Saratoga, and Chip Miller said to me, he said, man, what are you doing today? I took a big, long, deep breath. I said, man, I got to do 42. I'm dying, 42, man. And Mike Smith and Santos, and they fell off their stools laughing. Yeah, 42. And we had a good laugh. But for you, what are the scales like? Is that an issue? Is that a fight every day? Or what's your weight situation?
It had been at one time when I was expected to do light, and then I wanted to meet that expectation. But then they've also adjusted the scale weight over the course of the years, and that's been beneficial. Plus, I've just decided one day I'm not going to beat myself up because it was just too costly. And that would have probably been one of the things that have taken me out, was just constantly reduced. But I'm naturally kind of small. I've got a stocky frame, and I'm able to make the weights to this day, and I'm comfortable. And just with the course of years, it's people ask me about diet. And really now it's a way of life. I do diet. I did diet, but I don't think of it as dieting now because it's just a way of life. It comes natural for me. I don't I don't fill my plate up, and I don't go back for seconds, and I eat very minimal of I know what my body needs. And when I can enjoy what I'm eating and then know that I've had enough, even though I want to continue, I assure you that, I just pull up. I've had people ask me, how do you just pull up? It's a way of life now. It's really no discipline. But it's just something that comes natural.
No question. It's important. I think that is a big struggle for everybody when you ride and you're the dieting part will really wear you out. It just kind of takes your ability and takes kind of just draining on you. So it makes a big difference to continue the way you've continued. Who were your heroes growing up? I mean, who were the guys you looked at, the jockeys out there? You said, man, I want to be that guy or try to mold your style to. Is there somebody that really stood out?
Oh, yeah, there was a variety of riders. And one thing that I did learn at a young age, when I say young, I was in a decade into racing, you always have these riders that do stand out, and you want to emulate their style and everything. But everybody, to the minute level, develops their own style. So I would just take certain riders, just the way they think, the style, the way they would, their hands, they sit on a horse, and kind of mix it up and try to apply my skills from the way I would sit on a horse to the way I applied all my skills. And over the course of the years, I know people, they're always asking me about the Hall of Famers and the most popular riders, but I actually was able to, over the course of the year, riding with some really sound, good riders that are maybe not as popular that had ingrained some really essential qualities in me. And one of them, like right here in Arkansas, was Larry Snyder. He's, passed away. But he had a lot of an integrity and drive to the way he applied his skill, and I realized that that had ingrained in me more so than the Jerry Baileys or Pat Days or even John Velasquez still rides to this day. And these are guys that you definitely are proven and are established and Hall of Famers that you continue to admire. But there's a variety of riders that I would really put together. Even the late Garth Patterson, he had
sure.
such a style, and that you just never knew about Garth. He would get the run and do things that were just incredibly impressive. And I'm constantly finding that in riders that maybe are overlooked by the public, and some horsemen do notice. But generally, there's no one particular rider that I've had to follow and try to emulate.
Do you see young jockeys today where you just want to kind of grab them and give them some advice? I mean, you've lasted all these years and done it the right way. Do you look at young kids and think, man, you're squandering a gift, or kind of look at it like a mentor?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got some riders that do come to me, and it's admirable that they'll want to sit down and even want me to watch their videos and really dissect it. And I'll try to encourage them in any and every way I can. And then, of course, as you well know, that everybody's got different personalities and the ability to receive advice. And I try never basically to ever advise anybody who doesn't ask for it. But at one point in time, I recognized that there was a time to approach a rider and certainly a time that you do not approach a rider. But this day and age, I rarely ever approach too many riders because, surprisingly, as I was sharing with some people, that now there's more riders coming to me because I think of the seniority position I have and the established career that I've been able to. I mean, I haven't got the best in numbers, but I always went into this game wanting longevity, and I'd love to have shot to stardom, such as Steve Coffin was a hero. But at the same time, I'm not sure if I could have been able to pursue that kind of excitement as it would have been. But I don't know if I'd still be around, because I can look back, and a lot of those guys that have accomplished such numbers didn't really make it into their 60s. So I feel really good. I'm still riding. And I think one of the things I did is I was able to pace myself, if that can be said, because you know how tough this game can be. You can be pacing yourself and feeling great, and then just one horse can make you feel sidelined and chronically labored up. But, I feel fortunate that I'm still competing at this age. And, there are riders that come to me for advice and ask me to watch them ride or review their films.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, that's a good role to have and be a mentor for young guys. And I think it's important. You got to do it your way. I mean, I think it's one thing I learned with my career. I'd watch somebody and you think you want that career, but ultimately at the end you realize that, you know, you got to do it your way. I mean, it's how it turns out for you. You've ridden in four editions of the Kentucky Derby, a big effort this weekend from Last Samurai. It's a long shot, but he's in the Arkansas Derby. How important would it be to get back to the Derby?
Oh, that'd be really important. I would absolutely love it. That's what allows me to continue to pursue this dream at this stage of my career. And I started it when I was young, and I've seen a lot of horses that I qualified for the Derby, but I've only made it there four times. So I'll just continue to pursue this dream as long as I'm able to throw a leg over the saddle and wear the white pants.
Oh, that's important. When you look back at your success, your career, how much of it is luck and how much of it is chalked up to hard work or talent? I mean, how do you kind of judge the two?
Well, you know, we're always pursuing Lady Luck, you know, and I'm trying to pursue Lady Luck's sister. She got to have a sister out there and a niece or whatever, but we're all in the pursuit of luck. But at the same time, you have to trump it up to hard work, dedication, and the commitment to hard work. Yeah, that's you just keep showing up with the right attitude and the right frame and bring your A game, and the magic happens.
So a combination of the two, a little bit of luck and a lot of talent or a lot of hard work, I guess.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, combination. Hey,
exactly. Hey, that's John Court, still going strong at 60, a class act all the way. All the best, John. Thanks for being on the show.
All right, Sean, thank you for having me. You guys have a great day.
Yeah, the ageless John Court. My thanks to John and to Sean Clancy for that segment again this week. You can catch it 10 a.m. Eastern every single Saturday, In the Room with Sean Clancy. If you missed any of the In the Room shows, you can go to horseracingradio.net/show, and that will take you right to our shows tab, which then it's easy. You click In the Room with Sean Clancy, and you can go flip through and listen to all of the ones he's done so far. James Graham, Richard Migliori, Ramon Dominguez, maybe my favorite edition of In the Room. Although there were others that were pretty good too. Drayden Van Dyke, Florent Giroux, Mario Pino, Junior Alvarado, Trevor McCarthy, Kendrick Carmouche. All of those really, really good. So head over there now. Check it out. horseracingradio.net/show. You can spend the afternoon listening to all of them until we get to the Masters coverage coming up later today. So head over there and catch up on some of the In the Room segments. A couple of things coming out of that. He mentioned John Court's, and John talked about it, his four Kentucky Derby appearances. His best finish so far came in 2013 with Will Take Charge, who finished eighth. His first appearance in the Derby, 2011. Arch was 15th. He had Optimizer in 2012, who was 11th, and Long Range Toddy couple of years ago, who was 16th. He's aboard a long shot in Last Samurai in today's Arkansas Derby for Dallas Stewart, who Dallas, much like his mentor Dwayne Lucas, known for pulling a rabbit out of a hat once in a while. Typically, with a guy like Dallas Stewart, you see a horse and he's a big price that Dallas trains, you don't throw him out, because Dallas is well known for getting horses into the exactas, into the trifectas, and maybe even pulling off a win every once in a while with a long shot. Last Samurai has his work cut out for him today. His previous start came in the Southwest. That was his three-year-old debut. And the Son of Malibu Moon finished fifth that day. He finished behind Essential Quality. As we know, Essential Quality is the likely favorite for the Kentucky Derby in 3 weeks, after winning the Bluegrass last weekend. But Last Samurai is going to have to do much, much better. He's going to have to run his career best race and then some if he wants to hang with Concert Tour and the rest of them. So John has his work cut out for him, but we'll be cheering for the six-year-old. He talked about longevity in that interview with Sean. And he talked about the fact that when he got into the game, that was one of his goals. He wanted to be around for a long time, and he has been. And he said what he's had to do is pace himself, continue to eat right. Even though there are many times he wants to have a second helping, he has to push away from the table. And as he said, pull himself up and say, hey, I'm not going to do it. But that's what makes guys like John Court so consistent, so good for so many years. Great conversations there. All of those In the Room segments have been so good. Again, you can head over to our site to check out the podcast of some of those. Coming up next, trainer Mike Stidham is going to be with me. He is trying to get to his first Kentucky Derby with the Godolphin Color Bearer Proxy, who is the morning line favorite in today's Lexington Stakes. He also has Michelin 2-1 on the morning line in the Grade 1 Jenny Wiley, and he is 2 weeks removed from saddling the winner of the Dubai World Cup, maybe the biggest win of Mike Stidham's career. He'll talk about all of that when we come back on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Spring Summer Meet is live at Gulfstream Park now through September 26th with live racing Thursday through Sunday. Thoroughbred Stakes action continues in May with premium stakes every weekend. Look forward to Summit of Speed on July 3rd and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. Stay in the action from your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For seat reservations, stakes schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site viewing is still limited, so book your seats now. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. Champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer, Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They turn into the footsteps of history, and it's Mystic Guide going up to challenge Hypothetica. Then Sleepy Eyes Touchure Wizard continues to come on, then Magnicore. Jesus's team are down the outside, but Mystic Guide races away in the cup. Inside the 200 metres mark, gets away by three. Chua Wizard, Hypothetical, Salute the Soldier, Magnicore. But it's going to be a Godolphin win, a Godolphin USA win. Mystic Guide charges away and takes the Dubai World Cup. Mystic Guide wins easily. Second, Chua Wizard. Third in Magnicore, then Hypothetical. Jesus's team, Salute the Soldier, the Great Collection, Ahusta Fiscal, Gifts of Gold, Sleepy Eyes Todd, and well back was title ready.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, continuing on this three-hour edition of the program. 3 hours every Saturday morning now. We are your home from 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern for the best horse racing talk on the planet. It's all right here on HRRN. And helping me make that possible is Mike Stidham, fresh off of that huge win in Dubai with Mystic Guide 2 weeks ago. It was a moment he'll never forget, and he is kind enough to spend some time with me here this morning. Mike, appreciate the visit.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, how about that little trip down memory lane, my friend?
Yeah, that was, believe me, I'm still kind of floating on a cloud from that, and it was an amazing trip.
Yeah, tell me about what that experience was like for you.
Well, I mean, it was both mine and Hillary's first trip to Dubai, and so there was a lot of new things, even though I had spoken to Steve Asmussen and Scott Blasey about, you know, just giving me some tips before I left. You know, there were just a lot of different things going on over there. You know, the distance walk to the track and back was like a 2 mile walk, which is a big difference from what we're used to over here. You leave the barn 2 hours before the race and go through a lot of different channels of testing and, you know, pre-race testing and different things that, you know, can get a horse agitated, and Mystic Guide was getting a little bit stirred up from all that. So it was, like I say, it was a bit different, and it was an adjustment that we had to make. And luckily, you know, the horse was able to adapt, and he actually did really well, you know, from all the traveling. He was really thriving over there, you know, just his attitude and his, overall temperament was really good. So it turned out great.
That's interesting to hear you talk about going to a guy like Steve Asmussen, who had the experience of been there, done that, to kind of get some advice before you went, so you'd have a sense of what might work for you and for your program. As you were saying that, I was thinking about, it's similar to, I guess, like the Super Bowl, for example, where you have a quarterback or a running back or any player, really, that goes to another athlete and says, hey, this is my first time in the big game. What can you tell me? What do I need to be prepared for? It sounds like you took the same approach, Mike.
Without a doubt. Like I said, I knew that Steve and especially Scott Blasi had been over there himself, with several horses over the years. And those guys were, invaluable to me as far as, helping and trying to, give me as many tips as they could. And it helped out a lot.
What was the biggest piece of advice that you think helped the most?
Just that both Steve and Scott said to me, be careful, don't overdo it when you get there with the horse, meaning they knew what I didn't know about, like I said, all that walking back and forth from the track and the routine of leaving the barn so early before the race. And they just kind of cautioned me that you don't want to get over there and do too much with your horse. And I took the advice because on Tuesday before the race, that was the one chance that we had to school the horse in the paddock. And again, that was like a evening 2-hour event that, he got a little bit hot. He got a little bit wound up from it. And the next day I just, he had trained that morning. He had schooled at 6 o'clock at night, and we didn't get done till after 8. And next day, I just gave him the morning off. I didn't even train him. And everybody was like, "Oh, why isn't Mystic Guy training?" And they were thinking something was wrong. But I just said, "You know what? This is a big difference in routine, and I don't want a flat horse on race night." So we gave him that Wednesday morning off, and then went back to the track on Thursday, and it was good advice from Steve and Scott.
Mike, I know that it was special regardless, but considering the circumstances and the passing of Sheikh Hamdan, the brother of Sheikh Mohammed, and of course you winning the Dubai World Cup with a Godolphin color bearer and Mystic Guide, did that kind of make things, did it add another layer to it for you and make it even more special in some respects?
Without a doubt. There was so many things going on. It was the 25th anniversary, the COVID situation, the fact that they were even able to, put the race on. And then 3 days before Sheikh Hamdan passes away and Sheikh Mohammed, went into mourning, winning it was huge. I mean, and I know just from – so the word that I got was that Sheikh Mohammed was just so delighted, to win the race. So it was definitely a little more special.
Talk about the race itself. As Mystic Guide is coming down the stretch and you finally realize that, okay, we're going to win the Dubai World Cup, what's that moment like for Mike Stidham?
Well, I can tell you this, that, leading up to the race and the post-parade, with the two loose horses and, seeing my horse getting wound up and, getting a little bit hot, really getting agitated. And, all I was thinking was, man, we came all this way and now he's, potentially, going to run his race in the, before the race. And, I had a lot of concerns, and then ultimately, when they got behind the gate and they had to unload for the second loose horse, finally Luis Saez took Mystic Guide off by himself away from the pony and just let him stand. And he, finally he just kind of stood there and he, relaxed. I felt a little bit better. But when he broke, and the big thing that we, Hillary and I and Luis, discussed prior to the race was, we've got to break good. We've got to get some early position. It's really going to be important that we don't get shuffled back and with a bad break. And once he got into that spot and he's laying third down the backside, you know, that was when I really felt, you know, hey, we can win this thing. And when the announcer said, you know, turning into the stretch, into history and seeing him, you know, take the lead, it was like a dream. I couldn't believe it was actually happening. So it was amazing. It really was.
Trainer Mike Stedham with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He has saddled 2,144 winners coming into today, and maybe none bigger than that huge win in Dubai in the Dubai World Cup with Mystic Guide 2 weeks ago. Mike, you talked about the experience of being in Dubai and part of that race for the very first time. There's a chance that in 3 weeks you could be part of the Kentucky Derby for the very first time with a horse of your own. Do you let yourself go there yet? Is it too early?
You know, really, with Proxy, we are running today in the Lexington, and our goal is to try to make him a stakes winner, a graded stakes winner, since he's placed and run well in the stakes and fairgrounds, but he's not a stakes winner. So our goal right now is just to try to make Proxy a grade three winner at Keeneland today, and we're not even looking past that race today until we see how he runs, how he comes out of it. And at that point, you know, we're not really focused on trying to make the Derby. We're just, you know, trying to make him a stakes winner. And then we'll discuss, you know, what we do after that, whether we even consider the Derby or maybe look at, you know, if he runs really well, think about maybe the Preakness or, you know, any number of different races that are coming up.
You and I talked before the Louisiana Derby. That was on March 20th. It was on this very same show the morning of that race. I thought Proxy ran a really good race. Not good enough to win, obviously. Hot Rod Charlie got the victory. Proxy was fourth, but he was only beaten 3 3/4 lengths. What was your assessment of that performance, Mike?
You know, I really felt like I needed to see him kind of punch and kick in that last eighth of a mile in that race to feel confident moving on to the Kentucky Derby. And he didn't really give us that. We tried the blinkers, hoping that was going to give him that added little, oomph at the end. It didn't really do it. He did not run a bad race. As a matter of fact, you know, I used Rags and Sheets, you know, pretty exclusively for a number of years. And on Rags, he actually went from 11s to a 9 in the Louisiana Derby. So what looked like maybe a regression watching the race was actually a move forward on Rags. So that, you know, that was actually a good for the overall progress of the horse, but it wasn't necessarily what we needed to see for the confidence to go into the Kentucky Derby.
It's interesting that you mentioned the blinkers, because you and I spent a lot of time talking about that decision to add blinkers for the Louisiana Derby, and I remember asking you if, because you said you never really know until they perform in the afternoon with the blinkers on. You can see all you want in the mornings, but until they do it in the afternoons, you just don't know. And I remember asking you if it could backfire on you and go the other way. Do you feel like he finished better in the two stakes before the Louisiana Derby without blinkers on than he did in the Louisiana Derby?
Not really. What I really think, and the numbers prove it, is that the Louisiana Derby was just a step forward, just a better race. And yep. And it produced better numbers than the previous races. So I just think he, you know, caught horses, Hot Rod Charlie, that just, you know, ran better than what he was, that better than what Proxy was ready to do on that day.
Yeah, well, Proxy going to look to take another step forward in that Lexington Stakes later this afternoon. That is the co-featured event at Keeneland. It is race number 9, 5:30 Eastern time. That's 2:30 on the West Coast. mile and a 16th on the main track. Could be a off-main track, Mike, if we get some rain, as they're predicting here in the Bluegrass. Any concerns there? Proxy's never raced on a wet racetrack.
Well, that's something that we're all going to find out on, at the same time, including me. I mean, I think I have no reason to think he won't handle it, but until we get out there, you know, we won't know. It's starting to kind of drizzle as we speak right now. I'm at Keeneland, so I think we are going to have a wet track, and like I say, I have no reason to think he won't handle it.
Well, there may be a little bit of give in that turf course for your horse in the next race, the actual featured event of the day, the Grade 1 Coolmore Jenny Wiley. That is Michelin, another Godolphin runner who breaks from the inside post number one. Luis Saez gets a leg up, looking to recapture some of that Dubai World Cup magic from 2 weeks ago with Luis Saez. And Michelin comes out of that big win in the Grade 2 Hillsborough. Tell me a little bit more about her.
Well, Michelin, you know, she came off of a little bit of a rest after her Queen Elizabeth race here at Keeneland last year. She ran and won the Hillsborough in her comeback race, and I was delighted with the effort because I didn't put a lot into her getting her ready for that. I felt like maybe I was a work or two away from being having her, you know, 100% tight for the race. So when she went out there and beat what I thought was a really good field, Grade 2 at Tampa, when she went out and won that race, I was very impressed with the effort. And she's come back and had a couple of really solid works since that. So I think we're coming into this race in as good a condition as we could be.
Well, thanks for correcting me on that, too. Michelin, the proper pronunciation. And, Mike, I knew I was going to guess wrong on that. I went back and watched some of her previous races, and there were announcers that went with Michelin.
Yeah.
And I said, boy, I'm going to take my shot here and see if I get it right. But I appreciate the proper pronunciation as Michelin with your big filly there in the Jenny Wiley.
Yeah. We're anxious to get out there and try to win a Grade 1, whether at Keeneland, it would be a big accomplishment.
Salty race, too. Etoile in there from the barn of Chad Brown. As we know, Chad's always tough in those races. He also has Tama here, who breaks just to the outside of Michelin, and Juliet Foxtrot for Brad Cox. That's a salty race for a six-horse field.
Yeah, I mean, look, anytime you run in a Grade 1 at Keeneland, you know you're going to be up against it. So we expected, you know, a tough group, and we that's what we've got. I think it's a pretty evenly matched group of fillies and mares.
Well, Mike Stidham here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, listen, I know it's a busy morning. You've got work to do, so I'll let you go. Really appreciate the time, and congratulations on the big win in Dubai. All the best later this afternoon.
Well, thank you, and again, I appreciate you having me on.
All right, Mike Stidham here on HRRN. When I come back, you'll hear from another trainer, a pretty good one, too. That's Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
And it's a major upset in this 2021 Wood Memorial. Bourbonic is 72-1.
Bourbonic, the son of Darley stallion Bernardini, stormed home from the back of the pack to win last weekend's Grade 2 Wood Memorial, punching his ticket to the Run for the Roses and making him your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Bernardini is the sire of 23 Graded Stakes winners on dirt since 2015. No stallion standing under $175,000 can top it. In addition to Bourbonic, Bernardini also had four graded winners as a broodmare sire over the weekend, bringing his total number of career graded winners as a broodmare sire to 27, more than any stallion of his age in history.
Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
With three furlongs to go, it's Midnight Bourbon. Mitchell Morrow makes a move with Proxy between horses. Florent Giroux and Mandaloon, green with a pink sash, being driven now to engage Proxy and Midnight Bourbon. Then Regular Guy and Arabian Prince. They straighten past the quarter pole. Top of the stretch, three quarters. 1 minute 13.57 seconds against the rail. It's Midnight Bourbon. Midnight Bourbon leads them into the final furlong. Leads by three. Mandaloon and Proxy, they battle it out. It's still Midnight Bourbon. Past the 16th. Midnight Bourbon, Proxy, Mandaloon, Gamely. Here it is for Midnight Bourbon. Wins the comp. Holds Proxy and Mandaloon.
John Dooley with the call. That was the LeCompte Stakes at the Fairgrounds back on January 16th. A big win for Midnight Bourbon. He returned to finish third in the Risen Star, second in the Louisiana Derby back on March 20th. And he will take Steve Asmussen back to the Kentucky Derby again. Steve still looking for that elusive first Derby victory. And he'll try to pull it off with Midnight Bourbon. And who knows, maybe even Superstock or Swift Shore if one of those two horses could find a way to the winner's circle later today. Swift Shore going in the Lexington Stakes at Keeneland. Then he has Superstock in the Arkansas Derby. He also has Strike Power in the Grade 3 Count Fleet Sprint, which is the race preceding the Arkansas Derby today at Oaklawn. And yesterday, Steve took time to visit with the Big A, Anthony Stabile, on our weekday race day program and talk about his contenders in today's stakes.
Hall of Fame trainer, I should say, Steve Asmussen, nice enough to join us now. He'll be looking for, I guess technically his fourth Arkansas Derby, Curlin, that one with Creator. Got put up last year with Basin in one of the divisions of the Arkansas Derby. Steve, thanks for some time today here on race day.
It would be the fifth. The Private Emblem won it also.
Private Emblem, you see.
Was our first Arkansas Derby winner.
Thankfully, you're on the ball a little more. It's been a long week. You know what? I can't even say that to you.
One of them.
I can't even say that to you with a straight face that it's been a short week. I would love to know how many miles you've driven in life.
Who in the world knows? It's good to have somewhere to be.
Yes, it's good to have somewhere to be. Tomorrow, unfortunately, you can't be in two places, but you will have runners in both of the final preps, if you will, for the Kentucky Derby. Let's start at Keeneland. I know you are physically in Oaklawn for the Arkansas Derby and spend most of your winter down there. We'll talk about that. Let's talk about Swift Shore a little bit. This Lexington is a little bit of a... It's a mishmash almost every year. Some guys and gals looking to get to the Derby, some thinking Preakness. Some people just want to win the Stone Street Lexington. Talk about Swift Shore a little bit, who certainly looks like a horse that is a major player in this race tomorrow.
He's an extremely talented horse, only two races. He has had a little bit more of a break than would be ideal since his last race, but feel that the Lexington is the right spot to start, give him a two-turn chance, and hopefully he can get into the mix of the major three-year-old races later in the year.
Now, obviously, and like you just said, later on in the year, obviously the Derby not in play for him. Do you think, and I know you're not one that usually thinks too far ahead, but do you think about a race like the Preakness with him, depending on what happens tomorrow, or are you thinking more like Haskell Travers second half of the year for him?
I think everything just, how he handles his first two-turn race will be, it'll make everything very obvious what we need to consider.
A couple of sprints so far under his belt. Sean Bridge-Mahan rode him first time. He went wire to wire. Ricardo Santana Jr., your main man down in Oaklawn Park, almost 2 months later, rode him the second time from just off the pace. I mean, you get a guy, speaking of Creator, who was Rod Ortiz Jr. aboard that day with an amazing ride in the Belmont Stakes. The way he's riding... we haven't seen this in a while. Do you give him any instructions tomorrow, being that he hasn't been on Swift Shore yet?
I spoke with him. I think you just ride races as they come up. If I was that good of a handicapper, I wouldn't get up in the morning. if you knew where everybody else, what they planned on doing, where they were going to be. Just let them know about Swisher and his personality and what to expect from him. But he will break well, and I would be very surprised if he wasn't on the lead.
If you ever decide you want to do that, by the way, we don't start race day till 3 o'clock. Sometimes we record earlier. I'm sure we can move Newman out of that spot, and you can co-host with me whenever you want.
I'm
just
not
so
even
you know.
Good at it.
Asmussen Equine, one of the owners here. Does that
Cash?
Does brother Cash put a little more pressure on you?
I in the fact that what could be better than to have a great horse for family? You know, the two horses that run, as you mentioned in the prep, have family connections, and it's racing allows for that. I think it's the most amazing part about horse racing is family involvement.
I mean, I'm sure the dinner table gets a little different when Superstock heads to post. One of just six in the Arkansas Derby, $1 million on the line, a lot more points, 100 to the winner, 40 to second place finisher. So 1-2 would earn him enough points tomorrow. Obviously, taking on the undefeated Concert Tour and Caddo River. Superstock, I thought he ran a sneaky good race in the Rebel. I could have very well been second that day. The inside looked like the place to be. Hosier got there. He didn't. Talk a little bit about Superstock.
He is a horse that is already blessed us with his win with Keith James riding him for his first stakes win last summer. And he kept very good company through the fall. His third place finish in the Breeders' Futurity. And I agree with you in your assessment of the Rebel. The fact that he kept coming, I think, speaks extremely well for him moving forward. And I love how he's trained since the Rebel going into the Arkansas Derby, well aware of how fast the horses in there are.
He had just one horse beat early on in the Rebel. Actually dropped back to last at one point, going to the far turn, and passed some horses late, made up a little bit of ground. He's a horse that broke his maiden in that restricted Texas Futurity race down at Lone Star, essentially on the lead. Certainly doesn't look like he needs to be that far back. Reunited with your main man, Ricardo Santana Jr. Plan to maybe stay a little bit closer tomorrow in the Arkansas Derby?
I think, as you mentioned, six horse field, drawn one. Use your post position, get to the first turn, and leave him alone from there. And I think that just the post draw, six horse field, mile and an eighth, nice run to the first turn. He will be in the race early.
He looks like a horse that's going to appreciate the distances as they get a little bit longer.
I really liked the Breeders' Futurity. I mean, he was off the bridle, being ridden hard going into the second turn, and still he lost a little bit of ground, but obviously to the champion, but stayed on really well. And I think that he has matured nicely. Nice, big, growthy colt that covers some ground. And how he finished up late in the Rebel, his first run of the year, I think he stays on nicely. There's a very good chance of the race tomorrow being very fast in the middle fractions, and hopefully he can stay, keep him in sight.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the time. Good luck this weekend going forward. Right.
Steve Asmussen going to be very, very busy coming up later today. We'll see if he can pull off a victory in the Arkansas Derby and, of course, in the Lexington Stakes, and maybe the Count Fleet, too, all three graded stakes races. If he were to win the Lexington Stakes with Swiss Shore, probably not going to have enough points to find himself in the Kentucky Derby. So this, as Anthony asked him, probably not the goal to get Swiss Shore to the Kentucky Derby. He would have 20 points. He would get 20 points for winning that race today. That's not going to be enough to get him in all likelihood. That's typically around the bottom number. Anywhere from 20 to 24 is enough to get you in, maybe. Put you on the bubble. But I don't think 20 would do it for Swiss Shore if he were to win today. Superstock, on the other hand, in the Arkansas Derby, a big effort today, he would find himself in position to run for the Roses in 3 weeks. All the best to Steve, and my thanks for taking the time to visit with Anthony yesterday on race day, which, by the way, you can catch that program every
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday afternoon from 3 to 6 Eastern with Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman. It's all presented by Twin Spires. I'll be back to wrap this one up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud to once again be your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 greatest stakes winners and more lifetime grade one winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and grade one victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And two-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the grade one Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Good news, racing fans. Santa Anita Park is now open to the general public. Just visit santaanita.com/open. Walk-up admission is not yet available, and fans are asked to please socially distance and wear a mask upon arrival. All of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet. Looking ahead, Santa Anita will operate on a Saturday and Sunday basis through Sunday, April 18th, in order to freshen our turf course and prepare for the remainder of our winter spring meet, which runs through June 20th. The Grade 2 $200,000 Californian will be run on Saturday, April 17th, and make plans to join us on April 18th as top sprinters go 6 furlongs in the Grade 3 Kona Gold. Again, first post time this weekend is at 1 o'clock, so join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Brisnet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Brisnet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Carlos Martin, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The new Blood Horse Plus is now available through bloodhorse.com. It provides exclusive, timely, and unmatched content to subscribers, including Fox Sports / Blood Horse branded weekly programs, which are showcasing the thoroughbred industry's upcoming races and recapping recent stakes races, a daily detailed stakes winners section, weekly multimedia interactive shows, behind-the-scenes videos, on-demand access to deeper horse statistics, Blood Horse Market Watch, monthly credit on equineline.com, and so much more. That's the new Blood Horse Plus on bloodhorse.com. You can take a look today and see what you've been missing. Well, the poll question today, the response is still continuing to come in, and my thanks to everyone who took time to weigh in on the poll question, but it was pretty simple. If you could choose one jockey, past or present, to ride your horse in the Kentucky Derby, who would it be? And looks like Chris McCarron is starting to get a lot of love. Chris McCarron, Jerry Bailey getting a vote. I like this one. Kendrick Carmouche, for sure. He would bring so much joy to the experience, win, play, show, or whatever. That is so true. Chris Antley with a vote. Calvin Burrell getting some love. And, of course, Gary Stevens still in there, too. So Ramon Dominguez, I like that one, too. One of the classiest guys in the game. My thanks to everyone for weighing in on the poll question and for listening today. My thanks to our special guests, Nancy Holtis, Jim Lawson, John Sadler, Mike Stidham, and, of course, you just heard from Steve Asmussen as well. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is go to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Back with you next week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Check out a full schedule on our website. For my producer, Lee Delapina, for Chauncey with all of our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. Go Steelers and go Phil. He made the cut. 2 under through 3 today. Look out. Go Lefty.